From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. 71 sponsorships to go now for Children's International. This is the final week. We've reached every goal. This is tough economic times, but I need 71 of you over the next couple days, preferably tonight, to go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. If you can afford pennies a day for a one-year commitment, you just click the icon of Children International and sponsor a child. It's that simple. 71 to go. We started at 250 to go. So we're moving along, but we've got just 1 week to do it. Here's what's happening. The Obama administration took aim at tarmac horror stories. Ever been on one? Ordering airlines to let passengers stuck in stranded airplanes to get off the plane after 3 hours. I think the most I've ever been stuck, knock on wood, on a plane has been about an hour or so. With its new regulations, the Transportation Department sent a message on the eve of the busy holiday travel season. Don't hold travelers hostage to delayed flights. The Air Transport Association, a trade group that represents U.S. airlines, said in a statement that carriers would comply with the new rule, even though the group contends it will lead to canceled flights and greater passenger inconvenience. Under the new regulations, airlines operating domestic flights will be able only to keep passengers on board for 3 hours before they must be allowed to disembark a delayed flight. The regulation provides exceptions only for safety or security, or if air traffic control advises the pilot in command that returning to the terminal would disrupt airport operations. That could be their way out. A new global body dedicated to environmental stewardship, it's called, is needed to prevent a repeat of the deadlock which undermined the Copenhagen Climate Change Summit. The United Kingdom Prime Minister Gordon Brown will make that announcement on Tuesday. The UN's consensual method of negotiation, which requires that all 192 countries reach agreement, needs to be reformed, he says, to ensure that the will of the majority prevails, which means they could probably force feed us to do things we don't want to. A Maine legislator wants to make the state the very first to require cell phones to carry warnings that they can cause brain cancer. Now, although there is no consensus among scientists that they do, and industry leaders dispute the claim. You know, we've had guests on over the past few years who say that there appears to be a problem with the overuse of cell phones. The devices carry such warnings in some countries, though no U.S. states require them. According to the National Conference of State Legislators, a similar effort is afoot in San Francisco, where the mayor there wants his city to be the nation's very first to require the warnings. Sad story over the weekend, and now the family of actress Brittany Murphy has paid tribute to their shining star after she died at the age of 32. Murphy, who starred in Clueless and 8 Mile, simply collapsed at home in Los Angeles and was pronounced dead at the hospital. Reuters, the news agency, is reporting that she simply died of a cardiac arrest. Very sad story there. Christian Wild, who monitors all kinds of medical stories for us with his work, the Miracle Stem Cell Heart Repair, and also his stem cell and turmeric research report, is on the line with us now. Christian, this is a sad story, and I got to tell you, when they say a 32-year-old woman dies of cardiac arrest, to me, that's not natural causes.
It's not natural, and it is pathetic to think we've lost another talented and beautiful young lady. I know her father. I spoke to him about an hour ago. He's always been so proud of his daughter and loves her very much. And it's distressing when this happens. You know, I was looking through, and this is purely speculation, but I was looking through the medical journals tonight. No, there's been speculation, of course, that it could be anorexia or that that is involved in anorexia nervosa. But I found a story called Why Do Individuals with Anorexia Die of Sudden Death?
Yes. Like Karen Carpenter.
Like Karen Carpenter, yes. As a matter of fact, I was at the Long Beach Civic Center over the weekend, and they had a tribute to Karen Carpenter. The mechanism of death is very difficult to speculate on in a case of anorexia nervosa. But there was a 36-year-old woman, but they could not, until they did, the autopsy actually determined the cause. Now, in Brittany's case, apparently there were multiple contributing factors that would make it particularly difficult to speculate as to a reason for sudden death. Apparently, Brittany had diabetes 2. Was she treating for it? People with diabetes can develop nausea and vomiting if their sugar and their insulin balance become disturbed, and it was reported that a significant amount of vomit was found at the scene. Now, from what I've gathered, Brittany was hospitalized this last year for low blood sugar, which could be in one indication. But then vomiting is also associated with heart attack, as in sudden death.
Well, that's a sad story. And, Christian, I wanted you on tonight for a few moments just to once again tell our vast coast-to-coast audience what they can do, the health things they can do. Let's get them to your website and to your research report. Because, you know, if you can save just one person, and you've saved many on this show, to me it's all worth it. So your website, myheartbook.com, and what about the research report?
Same place. You can find it there, or you could call it in to 866-STEM, S-T-E-M, 123, or myheartbook.com. Yes, if there's something that we can provide in the way of information that can prevent things like this from happening to just one person, then it's all worthwhile.
And it goes to show you just how you got to live the day for the moment. Let me tell you, it's quick. A Chinese woman is said to have surgery to remove a 50-pound tumor from her back after doctors agreed to operate for free. She's 47 years old. She is dubbed the Tortoise Woman. She could not afford to pay for the operation. A plastic surgeon said that she suffered from a nerve fabric tumor, which could only be removed surgically, 55 pounds. Well, you know, we've heard stories of people in the middle of just incredible tension being able to do things with incredible feats of strength, almost like Superman. It happened in Kansas. A fellow by the name of Nick Harris, he was driving when he saw a little girl, a six-year-old, hit by a car that was backing out of her driveway. She fell under the car and then was slowly dragged away. He jumps out of his car. He runs up to the car that is on top of this little girl. He picks it up and pushes it out of the way. The girl is rescued. She's got minor injuries. And this is what he said afterward. I've tried 4 or 5 times to lift this car up after this event. It's impossible. I can't do it. I guess it's my Christmas miracle. Probably is. And oh, by the way, we will be live Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night with a number of guests and also your Christmas miracle stories, open lines those days. The Philippines, the Mayon volcano, turned up the heat with lava fountains and loud rumbling sounds Monday, and officials said it was getting closer to a major eruption that could come at any time. Tens of thousands of villagers have been evacuated from the foothills as a precaution. Incredible story from NASA. We've got it linked up at coasttocoastam.com. NASA scientists have revealed a first-of-its-kind image from space showing reflecting sunlight from what they say is a lake on Saturn's largest moon, Titan. Is it a lake? Let's check in with the head of the EnterpriseMission.com and our science advisor, Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, what do you think of this one?
Well, this is pretty cool. This is a lake. It's not a lake like anything you'd want to swim in. It's a lake of liquid methane, or ethane, or propane, or a combination of that and plus some other stuff, at about 300 below zero Fahrenheit. So I would not go skinny dipping. But it's a confirmation of a theory which has been out there for quite a while, going back to when Carl Sagan, my departed friend, was postulating such things on Titan 20-some years ago. They have done radar scans where they see these dark black areas that don't seem to reflect any radar waves near the north and the south pole. But because of the tilt of Saturn and the Saturn system and Titan, the north area, the north pole, was in darkness up until the last, you know, couple of months. And they got just at the right angle. They looked over the north pole toward the sun with the Cassini infrared spectrometer, And lo and behold, through the infrared, they got this brilliant flash, a specular reflection, it's called, like a mirror reflection, off this absolutely smooth surface, which can only be a lake.
That is fantastic. And by the way, you've been looking at these spiral stories.
Oh, my gosh, have I.
I'm beginning to think they're not Russian rockets. What are they?
Well, I've got a very extensive part two of the first part that we posted on the Enterprise a couple weeks ago. It's gotten much more complicated. Did you hear about the huge pyramid that was found floating over the Kremlin?
Yes.
The
bizarre.
Same night?
Yes.
Wait till you read the connection I found between that object and the spiral in Norway and a whole bunch of very extraordinary stuff that has required very detailed calculations. That's why it's not up there yet, because I'm trying to do the science by the numbers, pun intended, and it's taken a little longer than I would have liked. Christmas is coming, and I'm racing the clock, but I think everybody's going to be really pleased when they see it. And the really interesting thing is there's an incredible potential connection to something you and I have discussed on the show many, many, many times, George, a secret space program.
Well, you've been a believer of this. And heading back to Los Angeles shortly after the first of the year, Richard Robin wanted my address. Are you sending me something?
Yeah, but I think it's going to have to be one of those 12 days of Christmas things. We've been preparing post-production, the DVD from the Secrets conference in Tempe, and we ran into some technical problems, some glitches. I couldn't get the third camera to work. My editor, Jeff Bugby, actually got a miracle software fix, and we've got that now, but the production is running late. So everybody who's ordering this really incredibly interesting background on the secret space program involving John Kennedy, NASA, and yes, our friend President Obama, you're going to be really surprised about this one. We're going to have to wait to sometime, you know, that first week in the new year, because we just can't get the quality that I demand, and now we have, and it's moving along. But remember, things that are delayed at Christmas are special, so when you get it, George, I'll be really intrigued to hear your reaction.
Okay, and as you know the old saying, Richard, some good things are worth waiting for. So
thank
you, my friend. You have a good Christmas, you and Robin. Up next, Dr. Robin Kelly joins us live from New Zealand as we talk about the human antenna, reading the language of the universe and the songs of ourselves. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Robin Kelly has integrated Western, Eastern, and modern mind-body concepts within his medical practice in New Zealand for 25-plus years. He's a past and current co-president of the Medical Acupuncture Society and a founding trustee of New Zealand's Mind-Body Trust. Since the 90s, his major interest has been in researching the roles consciousness and quantum theory play in the deep healing process. And over the past few years, Dr. Kelly has introduced energy psychology techniques alongside medical acupuncture to his practice, and you know he regards this as one of the most vital steps in helping people regain full ownership of their healing. His latest work, The Human Antenna, which we all are, here he is, Dr. Robin Kelly, live from New Zealand. Hello, Dr. Kelly. How are you?
Hello, George. Look, I'm fine. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I'm really looking forward to this. I hope I can be of some help to people.
The human antenna. Tell me what the concept is.
Well, you know, one of the things I've learned, I've been in medical practice now for 35 years. And I've noticed then, you know, I've asked people when they last felt well, when I often see them in an ill state. And then they would recount, oh, like I was last well maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I said, well, what was the essence of being well? the essence of being well for so many people is that they're living in the moment. They don't actually notice their bodies. They feel light. They feel spontaneous. They're as almost as if they're at one with their surroundings, at one with nature. They're feeling light. Often they're involved in something that they love doing. They may be involved in art or painting or just laughing or with friends. So they're really in this hyper-connected state. I got concerned to a certain extent when I was discovering this because I thought, gosh, hey, you know, I've been through medical school and I haven't really been told what being healthy is about, being well. We've been told so much about illness, but, you know, what are we striving for in this life? And so hence it was born, the idea to me that we were, in fact, when we were well, communicating with the world. We were both emitting messages in a connected state and receiving almost in an instant state, in what I go on to describe as in a non-local state as well. So we're, and I think that is in, we're here to create and we're here to do good works. And that is why we're here. And it's also when we're happiest and when we're well. And so my practice is to strive to allow people to get to this stage with whatever they present to me.
Dr. Kelly, I've got a friend. He's in the hospital. He fell 3 weeks ago. He's literally paralyzed. He's moving his fingertips and his toes. He was doing that when he went in, but he's not moving. He's not moving his arms. He's not moving his legs. They say he hasn't severed anything in his spinal cord, but he has bruised it. Why does the body shut down like that? What's happening to him?
Yes, and I used to call it locked-in syndrome, you know, because in fact we're locked in. And that, in fact, you know, when we look at healing, in fact, there are many times that in the road to healing that our bodies do shut down. So that's what happens often in depression. It's almost like we retire or we retreat to some inner solitude. When we're asleep, for instance, you know, certain chemicals change so that we don't have to pass urine or drink. When we're in coma, the same thing happens. So, in fact, you know, all the energy is put to healing rather than all the unnecessary things. People often complain when they're unwell to me, gosh, you know, I can't remember names and my mind's a fog and, you know, I can't do my work. But, in fact, you know, that's what the body's doing. It's actually reducing down what it sees as unnecessary work, which is actually remembering names and recalling. But, of course, we find this is very distressing, especially, you know, if we're used to recalling names as well. So, you know, in many ways, what we have termed illness can be a stepping stone. And I feel for your friend, and I'm so sorry, because I don't know what the outcome will be there. But often what we've cast as illness, in fact, a stepping stone to a deeper healing process where the person is forced to actually look within and look at themselves. And you know, so often it's actually to take care of themselves and give themselves the ultimate in compassion. And when that lesson's learned, often there's a deep healing process that begins. And often, you know, this is something that it's almost like going back to childhood. If we actually have a childhood when we're supported and loved, then in fact, you know, this lasts with us the rest of our lives. If we don't, in fact, we often are forced through injury or illness to go through a process where we have to reconnect and reconnect with the compassion of others and also the compassion of ourselves. So I don't know if that helps, but I believe that there are these deep processes at play, even in the most difficult and dire situations.
The fact that although all the cells seem to communicate with each other tells me that there's either got to be some kind of intelligence behind each cell, almost as if they have their own little brains, Dr. Kelly. Do they?
Absolutely, you know, and I think that, you know, you can say that there's consciousness in everything. In fact, you know, there's the thought, and I certainly sort of, this is a thought that I go along with, that there's the primacy of consciousness. In fact, consciousness in information is primal. In fact, our bodily function and our physiology and our biochemistry is, in fact, secondary to that. And in fact, you know, that each atom has a consciousness. And if we look back at very primitive animals that have been on this earth for 500 million years, if you put them in a pond, they seem to know which way to go and how to avoid each other. You know, so therefore, even the most simple single-celled organism, like a paramecium or an amoeba, for instance, has a consciousness, a certain intelligence. And, of course, each one of our cells is the same. And the remarkable thing about our bodies is that they all do communicate, and they do not communicate in a linear fashion. They communicate all together, almost in an entangled fashion. So therefore,
it's remarkable, and it's called the human antenna. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry.
Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
In just a moment, we're going to be joined with David Sirita, our special guest tonight as well. Dr. Kelly, we were going to go a little longer with him, but there's a three-second delay coming out of New Zealand, and that's just too much for you and for me and for him. So we'll see if he can work on his phone system in the not-too-distant future, and we'll get him back because he's got an incredible work there called the Human Antenna. But up next, Mr. Incredible himself, David Sirita, joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. David Sirita has been an ecologist, a spiritual explorer, a space scientist for decades. His brand new e-book is out, Differentials and the Hidden Harmonic Codes of the Universe. He is one heck of a guy and a regular guest here on Coast to Coast AM. Here's David Sirita. David, how are you? Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, George. Good to hear your voice.
You getting everything all set for the holidays? It's coming up quickly now.
I've been just insanely busy, but we are managing here in Sedona.
Well, that's good. Good for you. Well, you know, we're looking toward 2012. It's getting closer. You've done a little analysis of that, haven't you?
Well, I prepared an entire piece of work in my spare time, quantum electrodynamics in 2012, and what I've done is I've superimposed
a model that came to me in the year 2000. This model has been around since my first Art Bell show in the year 2000. It's called the Galaxy Clock, and what it is this clock came to me when three beings of light, and just in the beginning of the year of the advent of 2000, appeared to me and showed me how to model in 3D everything from the most subatomic quantum particles to solar systems, star systems, and even the galaxy itself. So that's why I call it the Galaxy Clock. And what I've done is I've superimposed three models over the clock. One, spiritual models from different religions, including Native Indian traditions. I've also superimposed subatomic particles into the clock, and then I've superimposed the entire solar system and then eventually the galaxy into the clock. And what you start to see, you start to, you know, run different models and theories through the clock, and you start to get these answers. And you see a massive disagreement between what happens in the quantum universe. Imagine for just a moment that you took, you know, you take your basic proton positive charge, and you imagine that's like the sun. And then the electron spinning around the proton is kind of like our Earth. And if you blew that up to the same scale as the solar system, you would basically see that things appear that they're moving the same way. They have very similar orbits, the way, you know, the Earth revolves around the sun and the nine planets. And actually, our Earth is spinning at about 1,000 miles an hour at the equator, but our solar system is spinning at about 700 and some odd thousand miles an hour around the galaxy's core. So we are moving through new space every day, millions and millions of miles of it, of which no human being ever in the history of since the creation of the human species, even millions of years ago, if you go back to Lucy or some of the earliest, you know, studies on how old the human species may actually be in prehistoric man and woman, no human being has ever charted this territory in the galaxy before. We are like a spaceship spinning at this incredible speed. And so NASA, the advent of, you know, the Hubble Space Telescope and NASA, and now all these new invisible detection telescopes are seeing things that we've never seen before. And some of us like to think that science has all the answers about what's going to happen in 2012, and they know that nothing's going to happen or something is going to happen. And there's this big debate about it, but really, when you consider we're charting through millions of miles of space every day, no human being, no civilization has made one orbit around the galactic core yet. It takes 250 million years to make an orbit.
That's all?
Whereas an electron makes an orbit, you know, literally millions of times, quadrillions of times per second around the atomic, you know, core. So what you do is you start to study the way subatomic particles behave in their microsolar systems, and you compare that, and this is going to get really, really deep tonight, and then you compare that with what is likely to happen as our solar system is spinning around the galactic core and entering into higher dimensions of the galaxy.
This massive shift, though, is occurring now, isn't it?
Well, you can already see signs of it already happening. I mean, you know, we've had the Norway spiral, which is really for something. I've done a lot of phenomenal research on that, which we can maybe talk about near the end. But what really started to alarm, you know, and interest me the most is, you know, I've studied various world religions. In fact, I'll tell a story right from the beginning with a Native Indian elder, Wallace Black Elk, whom I did a sweat lodge with him just after the Northridge earthquake in Los Angeles. And I failed miserably. I couldn't even last one round in there because I get claustrophobia. I was on this mission to take his photograph, to take his portrait, and I thought, God, there's no way this elder is ever going to even, you know, consider me at taking his photograph because, you know, I just panicked and I, like, pounding on the walls. You got to let me out of here. I'm not going to make it.
Joe, did you freak that much?
Oh, I really, you know, I have a claustrophobia issue. It's pretty intense. It feels like you're incinerating, you know, when you get confined to a space that you cannot control the exit. So I might even have a problem in an Apollo spacecraft, actually.
So you could not go into one of these closed MRIs, could you?
I went into one, actually, for a very bad spinal, you know, from a car accident, and oh my God, they put the music on, put the headphones on, and I just, don't open your eyes, and I opened my eyes, and oh my God, it's just like, The temperature in the brain goes to a million degrees. It's terrifying.
David, I got to tell you, years ago, that happened to me too. I had a kink in my back, and they wanted to check me out. And you know, now they've got these donut ones, these open ones.
The open ones.
Kind of cool. You can see the ceiling and everything else, but they put me into this thing. I swear to God, it was like being in a casket. And you couldn't move your arms. You had to stay, you know, flat as a board in this thing. And it was a 40-minute test, David. I was 23 minutes into it, and the nurse said, "You must have moved. We got to start all over again."
Oh, my.
And I said, "Ma'am, I want out now. I'll heal myself."
Exactly.
And I left. That was it for me. I couldn't do it.
Oh, it's so difficult. But if you could control the exit, it would. If you could just push a button with your little finger and open it and close it, open it, and then you'd feel a little better about it. But yeah, I've had the new open MRIs as well, and they're a lot better. So there I am. I've completely failed. And the next day, there's a lineup of people to meet with Wallace Black Elk in Northridge. And I decided to show up, and he cancels all of his meetings, and he wants to see me. And I'm like, "Oh, you're kidding me." You know, so I brought him his tobacco, and, you know, I sat with him for hours, Black Elk, before, and this is, you know, he's now passed away. And, you know, he's the great-grandson of the legendary Nicholas Black Elk, who, you know, Neihardt wrote about in Black Elk Speaks.
Ah, okay.
And he said, "I'm going to tell you something that we never tell anybody in the white world and in your world." And he said, "The reason we don't tell anybody what I'm about to tell you is because we don't want people to think that we believe in, you know, something like hellfire." But he said, "In the turn of the next great cycle, the sun will produce a fire so powerful that it will burn the souls of the impure, but the pure souls will not feel this fire." And I thought, wow. I mean, how do you solve that riddle scientifically? How does a sun, if it's going to release this tremendous amount of, you know, solar energy, how does it make the distinction between a pure soul and an impure soul? And that was one of those, you know, Zen koans, you know, you meditate on for years. And, you know, he told me many other things, but that was one of the ones that really stuck in my mind, that there is going to be the great purification, what the Hopi prophecy talks about, and the sun is going to do something miraculous. Well, over the years and the years, you know, and also, you know, before I go to my next point, if we look in, you know, Peter 3:10 through 13, you know, King James Version, in verse 12, it says, "Looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat." So, and again, you know, I look at statements like that, and like Black Elk statement, and many others, including the Hopi prophecy, from a physics perspective. And I look at what happened. So in the galactic clock model. So let's look at some of the great miracles that happen as the electron is spinning around the proton, like a planet spinning around a sun.
Right.
It does unimaginable things. Things that completely disagree if you blow that model up to the size of the galaxy that our current physics would disagree with radically. And this is where Einstein had a lot of disagreements with quantum physics, because quantum physics didn't agree with, you know, theories on gravity and black holes. So as we're spinning this electron around the proton, what electrons do, this is very, very simple, you know, atomic structures discovered by Niels Bohr, is they jump these things called shells. And shells are not visible, they're invisible. If you imagine the different radiuses or distances from the center of the atom to the perimeter, and there's the electron spinning in the outer perimeter, when the electron goes to a higher frequency orbit, which our planet is, our solar system is about to do in the galaxy, the electron will radiate off a huge burst of energy. So if you were blowing up the electron to the size of the planet Earth, it would, or the sun, it would look like the sun was emitting a huge burst of cosmic energy. And so you look at that, and what happens is the electron actually gives up some of its mass energy, so it becomes lighter. It becomes a higher frequency particle, and it literally jumps to the other side of the atom so fast that the speed of light cannot see it do it. And it has baffled quantum physicists to this day, because they can't accept faster than light energies yet, you know, at least certain subatomic particle physicists cannot accept that. I mean, there are many that actually do. Well, what actually is happening is the electron is actually becoming lighter. It no longer weighs as much. The closer it gets into these higher frequency orbits, it's reducing its mass weight, and it's becoming something completely new, such as in the Bible they say there will be a new heaven and a new earth. This is also in 2 Peter. And we see that in the Hopi prophecy, after the great purification day, there will literally be a new cycle and a new earth, because according to the Hopis, we have gone through four of these cycles that they've measured. We're about to go into the fourth. So again, what we see happening, now if I blow that model up, if Earth was the electron, and in fact it just got lighter, and it accelerated into a superluminal energy field, and literally quantum leaped across the circumference of the atom faster than the speed of light. Now what is going to happen? Let's look at where our planet actually is right now around the galactic core, and we have very good data on this now. And it's incredible when you actually see this. You actually can see this in the models that I prepared. We are literally on the precipice of crossing through a barrier in going into the next barrier. And I literally believe that what that shift is going to be as if the planet is going to jump and the solar system into another galactic shell.
That's pretty traumatic if that happens.
Well, it's actually beautiful and traumatic at the same time, just like Black Elk said. Now, NASA has updated their data on their predictions about what the sun will do in 2012. And I watch the sun every day the way people drink coffee every day. You know, I check, you know, what's going on with the sun. And we've started just recently in the last month to see some micro-solar sunspots, so you get micro-solar flare activity. And NASA has now given us two dates for when this massive, epic, potential solar flare period could occur. One of them is now shifted. Instead of it was originally at 2012. They've now moved it to 2011 or 2013. There are two windows they see right now. And I had long conversations on email, not long conversations, but conversations with David Hathaway from the NASA Solar Observatory. And he's literally seeing something they've never seen before, and we've talked about this on your show before, but I'm going to go much, much deeper tonight, that the Earth's magnetic field is declining and will reach zero by the year in 2,000 years from now. And what that means is that the protective magnetic field around the Earth is weakening as we're moving towards this new solar flare maximum period. NASA is predicting a definite possibility that there could be trillions of dollars of damage in this new period that we're coming into. But remember that NASA's not God. They have never made a single orbit around the galactic core. We are entering new space at over 700 and some odd miles per hour every day, so they don't know. But what's great about the new telescopes that are out is they're looking deeper and deeper into the invisible, and they're able to see fields as they're approaching us, fields that we could even 15 or even 5 years ago, we were not able to see with any degree of accuracy. So what I'm about to demonstrate coming up is that there are new observations, brand new, just in the past year and also even in the past few months, discoveries that are happening in the higher frequency dimensions of our galaxy that utterly turn Einstein's theory of gravitation and black holes on its ear, completely turn it on its ear. And this was in the New York Times. And it's going to help us understand what is going to happen when, if the date is 2012 that we cross, imagine that our whole solar system may go into this higher frequency spin dimension of the galaxy. Electrons, when electrons jump shells, it's sudden. It's a sudden transformation that happens in a blink of an eye.
Is it dangerous?
Well, it's beautiful and magical and potentially dangerous all at the same time, because what happens with subatomic particles is because they become lighter, they don't weigh as much anymore. So therefore, because they're in a higher frequency state, they can actually handle more cosmic radiation than they could in the previous shell, right? So remember, Jesus, this is in the Gospels, that in a twinkling of an eye, literally, there will be a new heaven and a new earth. I mean, that fast. So what is happening with the advent of the invisible photography is, firstly, we can't see the shells and the electrons. We just can see the track that the electron spins around, so we know that the shell is holding it there. We're going all the way back, for me personally, to December 22nd, 1986, which is it's almost practically the anniversary of my greatest spiritual experience I've had in my life.
Explain that. Give us a few seconds. Tell us what happened.
Well, in 1986, December 22nd, I felt like I was physically dying in my room in Canada, shaking, my knees were wobbling, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with me, I mean, biologically. And I just started collapsing, and almost like a nervous breakdown kind of thing was coming over me. And I lied down in my small room in the pouring, you know, gray rain of Vancouver, British Columbia, and I just collapsed. And instantaneously, I was in this vision of this very, very poor house, and there was an old man lying in a bed who looked like he was dead, and two women in white robes with long black hair were praying over his body. I thought, he's dead, and what am I doing here so quickly? And the man woke up. He looked at me, and he walked over to me with incredible vitality, and he said, "Do you want to see an angel?" And the second I said the word yes, this thunderous white light just poured down from above. I mean, the angel singing was louder and more beautiful than 10 million Beethovens. I mean, I couldn't believe the beauty of the angels' voices. But there was no ecstasy, and there was no love. There was nothing but absolute terror of the power of the Creator of the universe.
Huh.
And my body started paralyzing one part at a time. Physically, I was aware in my room. I wasn't asleep. And as my neck became paralyzed, I thought, obviously this is God. You have nothing to be afraid of. And the sound of the angels singing was like literally more deafening than a million thunders. I just relaxed. And when I relaxed and accepted this death and this fear of God, an explosion of ecstasy like a supernova. I mean, levels of ecstasy and love that are beyond anything I've ever experienced in meditation, and since then even.
David, when we come back, I want to ask you about what happens when this shift occurs with the sun. Our special guest tonight is David Sirita. His website, voiceentertainment.net, which is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And if you need to reach me, it's george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The Gateway to the West.
This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, David Cerita tells us that the sun will release a huge amount of energy, which will affect the planet. We'll get more information on that from David when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Have you ever missed a great segment of Coast to Coast because you're simply so tired you can't stay awake at night? Well, C. Crane just may have the solution for you. It's called the CC Witness. The CC Witness is an AM-FM pocket radio, MP3 player, and digital recorder, and comes with automatic timers for recording. The Witness makes it easy for you to program, record, and store your favorite radio show and listen to it when you have the time. With The Witness, you can also record computer audio and live music with a built-in microphone, download and store all of your favorite podcasts, play the audio back through the earbuds or the small built-in speakers, and you know, it comes with enough memory you can store a month's worth of Coast to Coast shows. You can order a Witness for only $179.95. Call C. Crane in the morning at 1-800-522-8863. Here's that number again, 1-800-522-8863. You can also visit them online at ccradio.com. That's ccradio.com. C. Crane, the high-performance radio and light company. David, do you think the Mayans knew that the sun was going to be doing this kind of energy shifting?
I think it does it. You know, see, what happens with the electron spinning around the proton, and in more complex atoms, like the hydrogen atom has one proton, one electron, and of course the electron has an anti-electron or positron, and the proton has an antiproton, and then you have all the other little guys inside of there. So, you know, what happens with more complex atoms is there's more shells. And when the electron jumps the shell and it releases this huge burst of energy, and if that was our blown up to the size of our sun, it would look very violent initially, but what actually happens is there's a transformation of the particle in that process. It becomes a higher frequency, higher dimensional particle in that new high frequency dimension. And, you know, going back to, you know, before we get to, you know, what does the quantum theory say if it's correct in superimposing it over the, you know, astrophysical model or the cosmic model, then we're going to see what the answer is. And what the Mayans may have known is that, yes, every great cycle, when the solar system crosses another one of these shells in the galaxy, there is a temporary huge burst of energy, but also everything gets better. Everything gets lighter. The DNA all evolves. It all makes a quantum leap. And going back to my experience, December 22nd, 1986, and December 23rd, it happened 2 days in a row, I was going through these galactic shells, and shells are like circuit breakers. Think of them like circuit breakers. If you flood too much energy into a circuit, you fry the circuit. So you have to have these protector zones that control the amount of energy that can flow into a particular circuit so you don't destroy the circuit. And in a way, the electron does the same thing, and so does the galaxy. And so as I was literally coming to the edge of these giant membranes, were like clear crystal. And the levels of ecstasy and love were so overwhelming, I was begging God to stop. The ecstasy and the love were crushing me. But when I crossed one of these shells in the galaxy, and I knew I was zooming towards the center of the galaxy, the ecstasy on the other side multiplied another million times, and so did the love, and there were other qualities that were simply beyond even love that were unnamable, but the point is they all multiply another million times in that higher frequency circuit. And I went through six of these, and I actually saw the edge of the seventh, where I was convinced God's highest angels and God resided in the center of the galaxy. The highest level angels did. And so I've been looking for the answer in physics that could possibly explain that. So when you look at, you know, what Black Elk told me, you know, in the year 19, when the big earthquake, you know, hit in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. I think it was 94. Yes. And you look at what the the Bible tells us, and you know, the, even the Buddhist models tell us, and the Native Indian models tell us, when the Earth goes through and the Sun go through this together as a pair of giant particles, there will be a huge transformation. But even though it may look traumatic from our current understanding of physics, it may not be at all. In fact, that transition, because if the Sun is becoming a higher frequency particle and so is the Earth, everything, there's going to be such a massive shift in consciousness that we may or may not notice, even though it may look very, very exciting to look at the Sun as it goes through this, it may not physically affect all of us the same way.
Well, will we get blasted? Is there a possibility that this energy shift could just come right at us and hit us?
Well, firstly, remember that previously NASA could not even see dark matter. Because this is going to help answer the question. It was this invisible, you know, percentage of the mass of the universe that nobody could see. But now NASA has a lot of new instruments that are looking into the X-ray and the gammas, and they're actually even looking into the cosmic microwave background radiation. And here's a whopper. This is what reported October 30th, 2009 on the New York Times by Dennis Overbite. And what happened is this satellite that NASA was observing the galactic center. Now, this is another amazing thing, is as we're coming to 2012, we're getting more data and more incredible quantum leap understandings of what's happening in the galactic center than we've ever had in the history of the world. So NASA's it's called the WMAP satellite. They actually discover something in the center of the galaxy that shouldn't be there. Instead of this supposed black hole that's supposed to be devouring everything, something is utterly happening that doesn't make any sense at all, that agrees with the model that I've discovered for many, many years now, and also is in my book, Differentials. The last show we ever did together was we talked about the hidden harmonic codes of the universe. The hidden harmonic codes of the universe and differentials predicted that dark matter would transform itself through the differential between dark energy and dark matter and actually create matter, visible matter, out of what was apparently invisible, dark matter. And that's exactly what this satellite detected in the center of the galaxy. I just about, you know, fell off my chair when I read this, because they're seeing the birth of new matter decaying from dark matter in the center of the galaxy rather than the destruction of matter. They're seeing the birth of it, the actual birth of matter. This just turned all, when you read the article, you realize all of these physicists are completely confused, because now we have a conduit or a circuit pathway for dark matter to actually create more matter, which actually explains how the universe is expanding rather than it being confined to a limited or finite amount of matter. It's constantly converting from solid matter, you know, into light, basically back into physical matter, which is what Einstein's theory predicted. So this is saying that, you know, why isn't the core of the galaxy devouring this matter, and why is this happening?
It should be devouring it.
It should be, but it isn't. It's actually giving birth to it. And then I found another article, because I was looking, you know, ever since, you know, my research on water and how water is conscious, and that literally less than 10 seconds after the Big Bang, hydrogen was created. The first element, the most abundant element in the physical universe, was created. In fact, there are physicists now who believe that dark matter is just high-frequency hydrogen, and which means it was created even sooner than the 10-second mark after the Big Bang. Well, looking at distant galaxies, once again, looking in the core of distant galaxies, and thanks to these new invisible detection techniques, this was reported on phys.org, phys.org, and this was December 17, 2008, they actually found in the center of this galaxy something unbelievable. Water is being created in the center of this galaxy. And it's actually, you see, when you have this tremendous amount of electromagnetism, very, very powerful gamma rays, you know, as you're getting close to the event horizon of a black hole, gamma rays are so powerful that they should literally, they're too powerful for a biological organism to survive in their presence. They would just destroy virtually everything we know, you know, in a blink of an eye. But what they're finding is water is forming, actually being created like a type of fusion. And it's creating a membrane around itself and protecting itself from the radiation, firstly. And then it becomes something they call a maser, which is like a laser. The water magnifies the electromagnetic signal at the center of the galaxy and broadcasts it out with even more power, and the water ejects out of the supposed black hole. And it disperses itself as water. No longer hydrogen. It's now oxygen and hydrogen creating water in the center of the galaxy. But we know that everything that is primeval is being created to ultimately give the structure of, and the possibility of, all organic biological life forms. They need water, and it's being created at the core, the very place in my spiritual experience where I believe
that's amazing.
God's angels are. So we're seeing observations that show that what I believe is the higher the frequency, the orbit of the particle, the subatomic particle, or the planet, or the sun, they're actually getting lighter, not heavier, as Einstein's theory predicts. And they behave as if they're getting heavier, according to Einstein, because he can't understand how what we call a supermassive black hole can devour suns and stars and planets with utter ease and just rip them apart and convert them back into nothing, back into cosmic energy. But if they're getting lighter, it doesn't require more mass energy to do that. It requires less, which means, again, if they're getting lighter, then they're not destroying matter. In fact, they can both be destroying and creating the new.
Will this explain, David, the possibility of parallel universes or other dimensions?
Absolutely. Actually, in the galaxy itself, now, remember, okay, I'm going in my experience, and I'm actually seeing these crystal-like glass barriers, and every time I go through one of them, the energy explosion on the other side of it is another million times, so it's exponential. So let's say, theoretically, our planet is about to go through one of these membranes in the galaxy, and I believe it is. Now, I don't know it's 2012, but it might just be. And if it does cross one of these lines, what the quantum model tells us is the transformation is sudden and massive. And there may be a huge burst of energy coming from our sun. But according to the physics model, that's not as devastating as we may see from our perspective. It actually may just be a super high frequency burst of energy. And there may be some destruction, but we may be surprised that we may see a huge solar flare and release of energy from the sun, and then it will stabilize. It won't constantly be flaring in this transformation, and everything is different. In a twinkling of an eye, there will be a new Earth, the new Earth that Eckhart Tolle has been talking about, and, of course, the Bible talks about, and there will be a new heaven because we will enter a new dimension of the galaxy. Now, with these invisible detection technologies that are mounted on many of our satellites and telescopes, it's possible. Now remember, at going 750 miles an hour times 24 hours in a day, let me just say roughly 750,000 miles an hour we're doing around the galaxy every day times 24 equals, you know, 18, it's almost hard to believe. I'm getting a number of 18 million miles. I think I might have to do that again. I mean, that's a We're going that far every day. We're a spaceship. We're traveling faster than any spaceship anybody's ever created. So NASA can't say, oh, yeah, we know what's going to happen next year. Now, try to come from the perspective of understanding Einstein. Einstein says the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. It tells the particle what to do. And we are moving through new fields of the galaxy every day that no human civilization has ever seen, because there's no such thing as a 250 million year ago civilization. So that means NASA can't act like God. Oh, we know what's going to happen in 2012. They can't see the shells and the electrons. They can see their effects. We can see the effects, the rib-like layers of the galaxy. You can see it when you look at Hubble imagery of galaxies. You can see the rib-like structure, which are the effects, I believe, of the galactic shells. And so with these invisible detection cameras, I think it's going to come on us really sudden. We're going to see this blue, you know, vapor or cloud or crystal-like vapor that's going to show up very, very suddenly, and we're going to enter it.
Let's get your take on these spirals, because there is that tie-in, apparently, between what you're saying and what we've been seeing, isn't there?
Now, I've done a lot of research on the spirals, and I just want to pull up some of my data. This for me, I was personally involved with this story, and this really gets pretty amazing. Now, firstly, it was very clear that CNN reported that the Russians were not saying it was the result of a missile test for several days after the incident. In fact, they had no reason to believe it was initially. Even though there was a lot of pressure from the media, please just tell us it was a missile so we can get on with our lives. And
yeah, that's true.
So many things happened on December 9th, more than most people could possibly imagine, and I'm going to demonstrate some of them. But what happened to myself and my wife on December the 8th in the middle of the night, I know this, the event hadn't happened yet. I had this dream. I wasn't, technically, out of body. And I see two angels holding a new type of harp or instrument, and they're flying in the air, and they sing this beautiful angelic choir through these strings that is unlike any harp or instrument we've actually have in our musical or armamentarium of musical instruments. And at the end of the instrument, there's a stone that is levitating. And they tell me, if you can figure this out, you can figure out literally why the planets are levitating in anti-gravity. Well, I wake up, and my wife, who's a jazz singer, gets a math formula to give me that she got in her dream. And my wife's not a mathematician, like the kind of math I do in differentials. And I thought, how the heck could you get a math formula, and what does that mean? What she gets is, take away 3/4 of a rectangle, and you're left with 5.71. Or she said 5.71 or 57.1. She goes, I don't know which one it is. So I got up and I did the math, and I took, 5.71 times 4, so you get 4/4, and you take 75% of that away, and, people can do this on their own, on their calculator, because I don't have the numbers in front of me. So 5.71 times 4, and then minus 75%, and then you do the ratio of the two, and the ratio came to 1.333333333, an infinity harmonic code. And I said, oh, my God, what are the odds that my wife would get a math formula that makes perfect sense to me in searching for the hidden harmonic codes of the universe? Well, the next day, we were going crazy over, how the angels wanted us to build this new harmonic code generator, so that we could build a new harmonic code generator and do some experiments with our pendants with it. And all of a sudden, the Norway spiral appears the next day, December the 9th. And so what do? I start taking measurements on the Norway spiral because I've seen a lot of missile tests. In fact, I posted.
It sure didn't look like one, David.
It was too perfect. And, being a skydiver and spending a lot of time in high altitudes, the upper winds would have destroyed it in minutes.
And then this blue beam in the middle.
So what I did is I took measurements across all you got to do is blow up the image to scale and measure the diameter of the largest white spiraling wave and then measure the diameter of the largest portion of the purple wave. Here's what I got. I had blown up, here's my data right in front of me. I blew up the image of the outer swirl at 14 centimeters on my computer screen, which put the inner blue spiral, the widest part of it, at 1.5 centimeters. Or 15 millimeters. So you divide 14 by 1.5, and you get 9.333333333. I went, oh my God, those are the infinities of threes that I got from the angel experience the night before. This has to mean something. So then what I did is I counted the number of whites. I took that number, and of course it's December 9th, 2009, which are all about the laws of nine. And anybody in sacred geometry can tell you what the meaning of the laws of nine are. It's miraculous what that means. What are the odds that I would have that dream the night before? My wife would get a math equation that she doesn't even understand, and we're getting the 0.3333 equation. Okay, and then I counted at that point in the particular photograph 13 white spirals visible and 11 blue peaks on the blue spiral. So I divided 13 by 11. I got 1.181818, and of course 1818 breaks down to 999999. So you're getting this consistency in the laws of nine. Well, guess what happened on December 9th? I don't know if anybody in your show has clued into this yet. I know a lot of people have done a lot of good research, like David Wilcock and Richard Hoagland. But the Large Hadron Collider had fired up successfully the first record-breaking experiment only hours. I'm trying to determine how many hours.
Well, don't tell me that thing had something to do with it, David.
1.2 protons slammed into each other at an energy intensity of 1. Let me get the data. It's almost 3 trillion electron volts. An energy intensity that has not existed anywhere in nature, not in the sun, not in a nuclear explosion, since the Big Bang.
Are you saying the Large Hadron Collider had something to do about it? Let's check in with you next on Coast to Coast AM.
Get daily show updates right to your inbox for free with the new Coast Zone newsletter. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com. From the Gateway to the West, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Streamlink, are you a member yet? Well, for just pennies a day, you can be by going to coasttocoastam.com to sign up for Streamlink. Also, you've got the After Dark magazine available to you when you call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. David Sirita is our guest. Back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So, David, are you saying that the Large Hadron Collider, when they started flipping the switch, had something to do with that energy burst, the spirals that we saw?
Well, the Large Hadron Collider on Twitter.com said that on December the 9th, 2:48 a.m., their time, two beams of protons at 1.18 trillion electron volts each, so you double that when they smash into each other, they set a world record. Literally, you're talking hours in European time before the event of the great, you know, Norway spiral. And so I thought, okay, you know, that's pretty amazing as a coincidence. But the coincidences just started stacking up. I mean, there were UFO reportings that came in the pursuing weeks that on December 9th there were amazing UFO sightings from different places around the world. But we personally had, you know, my wife's uncle knows somebody really well who was in a coma for 3 weeks. in Sedona, Arizona, taken to the hospital at Phoenix. And he woke up on December the 9th, and he told his brother, this is all I know, is the world is not going to end the way they say it's going to end.
Well, that means, how will it end?
Well, you see, which is really amazing, that he would wake up on December 9th. I mean, there's so many coincidences. And, of course, Richard Hoagland found the HAARP was just over the hill, the European HAARP technology. And I thought that was interesting because the night before I dreamt about a new type of HAARP that these angels were showing me, and they showed me the mathematics of how to build it. And the coincidences just kept coming in. So finally, you know, to dispel the possibility, you know, was it a Russian, missile? I asked Boyd Bushman, who builds missiles for, General Dynamics and Lockheed Martin. You know, that's one of the things he does. And I'm waiting for the answer from him. And when I get it, I will post it, on one of my sites somewhere, so people can know from a professional opinion, are we really looking at a missile? I mean, whether it was really a missile or not, I mean, I can't say, I'm not God, I don't know 100%, but I can tell you there were so many coincidences on December the 9th, and there were other years on December 9th, on that day there were major, major UFO sightings. But let's go deeper into the mathematics and the idea of the higher frequency dimensions that the Norway spiral enlightened the world mm-hmm. to, and what is coming in 2012. When we look at the idea of an electron going into a really high frequency orbit in an atom, eventually it goes so high frequency when you strip it off of a proton, and Nobel Prize winner Paul Dirac did this. They go so high in frequency they pass the gamma ray spectrum, and they go into the magnetoelectric spectrum, which is where William Tiller, in my film Quantum Communication, says that this is where consciousness and matter merge. The power of the consciousness force merges at this level, at that domain, in the magnetoelectric spectrum and beyond. Now, this is really amazing, because when you superimpose that idea on the galaxy and you say that, okay, in the center of the galaxy, supposedly there's a black hole, which I don't think is there. I think it's just a higher frequency dimension. What's actually happening is that you also go, ultimately, the black holes is beyond even the smallest dimension ever measured, a sub-Planck length. The frequencies get so high, they also enter the magnetoelectric spectrum and beyond. Of course, this is where I am prophesying that, God's angels reside in the center of the galaxy, from my experience. Well, this is really amazing because, guess what? In the center of the galaxy, the New York Times reports, this was just in October, as I just mentioned, of 2009, it looks like dark matter is giving birth to high-energy electrons and gamma rays in the core of the galaxy. And dark matter, Cloud Swanson from the Synchronized Universe, says scientific experiments have been done that when dark matter is direct, the largest concentration of dark matter is directly over our head, which actually it is right now as we're speaking at this time of the year, the psychic force improves by a factor of as much as 4, which means the accuracy of mental telepathy, spiritual experiences, most of the ghosts or spiritual beings I see, I've now did a study, occur during the period which starts in the winter and goes into the early spring.
That's fascinating.
Which is really fascinating because what it says, what if dark matter is the consciousness force is merged with matter?
It's the conduit.
It's the conduit, and it's in the center of the galaxy, but it's also in the center of atomic structures, which is like your previous guess, how atoms are talking to each other. Well, they're talking to each other at a frequency domain in the atom, what Tiller calls the subtle energy domain, which is beyond the gamma ray spectrum. But what's amazing, when you take that knowledge of if consciousness at the center of the galaxy is creating matter and creating hydrogen, which would give birth to biological life forms eventually in the billions of years of history in a galaxy, then in a way it is God. It is the creative force creating life eventually in a very, very patient pace. But again, that tells us that as our planet and solar system make these quantum leaps when they cross these shells, if this is correct, The quantum, if the quantum model is correct and the larger scale model that Einstein set forth isn't, then everything is going to get a lot lighter, and we're going to go into a higher frequency dimension. And there have been many, many great people on your show, like Sheldon Neidel and others, that talk about the photon belt and the great transformation and the big shift. And that may look really dramatic as the sun goes into this shift, but it may not be so bad on the physical level.
David, all this that seems to be happening now, tied into the Mayans, how did they know? Let's assume all this is correct.
Like I said, every so many thousand years, the solar system makes a loop. See, we're a wave within a wave. As we're spinning around the galaxy, we're not traveling in a straight line. We're spinning around in an elliptical spiral kind of wave, just spinning along. And every time we make one of those revolutions, that's 3,000 and some odd years or more. I forget the exact number on that, so don't quote me on that. But that human civilizations have seen that loop happen before. And so they know that there is a major shift or transformation. Now, the same thing, again, happens in electrons. When they jump the shell to a higher frequency shell, the electron emits a huge burst of energy. But then electrons will jump back to the longer or lower frequency shell very quickly, and then they'll gain back their mass energy. And this happens very, very quickly. But there are some other things that happen in the quantum universe with particles that are called strangeness, that are so random in their behavior. For example, a big portion of the weight of our bodies is made up of strange quarks. And the strange quark is called strange because it randomly, without any mathematical formula that's repeatable and reliable, just like thinking, random and crazy, that this heavy particle will leave the body, leave the center of the atom, which means it leaves your body, and then it comes back. And physicists don't know where it goes, and they don't know why it comes back, and they don't even know what it brought with them when it came back. You see, so I predict, based on the quantum model, that if 2012 is the date, or if it's 2013 or 2011 even, I think it might actually be, Kalman says that the real head Mayan priest, Don Alejandro Oxide, says that the real beginning of 2012 is October 28th, 2011. And, you know, that's an experience, mystical experience I had. We talked about it before.
All by itself.
Yeah, and that may be, you know, the idea of the rapture. Again, think about your body and gravity and everything becoming lighter, meaning spiritual things and miracles will become easier. And we're already seeing evidence of that now. We're making quantum leaps of understanding in physics and even how the galaxy functions. Because NASA is now photographing the core of the galaxy with beautiful clarity for the first time, and we're seeing the imagery. We're learning so much every month as we're approaching 2012. I mean, at the very least, we're going to have a massive shift in our perspective and understanding and our ability.
You would be surprised if nothing happened, wouldn't you?
Well, I would be really surprised if nothing happened. I mean, I'm not saying that from a Buddhist perspective. I would be kind of flabbergasted if nothing happened. But what I know about fields, remember, when you enter a new field dimension, it transfers its energy to the particle, which is our bodies and matter, and it may even take us a while to realize what happened because it hits you on a subtle level at first, and then all of a sudden, wow, we really see, it's really obvious what has actually occurred.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, one of the things you're doing right now, I mean, I just got to applaud you for a moment because you're my hero right now. You don't even realize that when you bring on Ron Paul and you talk about the Federal Reserve, you don't realize that you are so courageous to take on a subject that everyone has feared as a public speaking person. And I just think you are the most courageous person in radio to take on and give these senators and representatives the seat.
Well, you know, David, I want the truth. I am tired of people, whether they're Canadians or Americans or wherever they may live, of getting ripped off by people who are greedy and manipulative. When I see so many people starving and struggling and fighting to get back to what they had years ago, you know, I've got to stick my head out there. And you know, they may try to chop it off one day. But you know what? Before they do, I'm going to go after all of them.
Well, it's so amazing to think that we are richer, I believe, right now than we've ever been in what money represents, which is goods, resources, labor, genius, thinking, education, transportation, technology. We have more of it than we've ever had. It's only the bank that says there's not enough money to move the goods and resources. And in fact, we could even afford right now, literally, to pay people to think. We feed enough, we grow enough food to feed the world three times over. Most food just rots and goes to waste. And we have enough stone and trees out there. And of course, I was a tree planter and I believe in reforestation. We have the resources to put everybody in nice homes, and we don't even need to be working as much as we are. And a lot of the global warming that's being produced out there is because we got two cars trying to pay for one mortgage and two people in the household, and we used to only have one. And we literally, we don't need to be doing this. We have outgrown the math equation of money. We have more of what money represents than we've ever had in history. But the calculators in the banks just don't get it yet. We actually have to go beyond money in 2012. We need to go to a whole new level of thinking about how to move goods and resources, because they're all there. All the people who are unemployed, actually, there's all the food in the world and the resources to feed them. There's no debt in nature. And so that's why for you to give the seat to Ron Paul and you know what Kucinich has been saying on the subject, nobody else has as much courage as you do out there. So I just
keep plugging away. David, a couple minutes to go, then we'll take phone calls with you next hour. Is that okay?
Sure, yeah, that'd be great.
Hubble, they fixed it. They cleaned it up a little bit. Are you impressed?
I'm so grateful to the Hubble Space Telescope. I mean, I'm on their site on a regular basis, and I'm always looking at what I love it when we're right about our observations, but I love it even more when we're wrong and we see something that just makes everybody go, "What? We thought it would, the universe worked this way, and there's something out there." In fact, we can see so far into our universe now, and it's amazing that we can't even move to Mars. We can't even build a base on the moon yet. But thanks to the Hubble, we have these eyes that can see, and the NASA Spitzer Telescope and the WAMP satellites and the Chandra X-ray Telescope. The Chandra X-ray can actually see dark matter now. It can see it as a big blue kind of cloud. And I am so grateful to NASA. I mean, I may disagree, and a lot of scientists may disagree with, you know, classical theory, which is classical theory is so old that every month there's a new discovery on the Hubble and in the quantum universe at the same time that causes massive disagreement. In fact, it's come to the point where they don't even know where to set the slate yet, because every time we think we know what's happening now, a new discovery has happened the very next day. So I'm very, very grateful.
What's it all about, David? I mean, there's got to be a reason behind all this.
Well, for me, it's all about ultimately, you know, having the experience of knowing who we are, where we're going to go next, and where our potential next really is in our position in the universe. And if we don't blow it, and we can get past this money and debt thing, we realize how creative and rich and genius we are all over the world right now. We can enter an intergalactic civilization, literally. And this may be the awakening that the field of intelligence of the galaxy itself transfers to us when we jump this new dimension of our galaxy. And, you know, that I'm excited to be alive in these times.
Interesting times. You know, they always have said, best of times, the worst of times, but I'm glad we're here right now.
Yeah.
We've got to be able to fix it. Tell me about that DVD, by the way, The Voice. What is that?
Well, the DVD, The Voice, came out a few years ago, and it's a vision of looking at what science knows about the authentic enlightenment of the saints of all religions, and whereas quantum communication focuses on the power of consciousness itself. And, you know, in both films, we interview major university scientists from all over the world, you know, and also, you know, Harvard, Harvard and Stanford and Berkeley and, I mean, the Princeton, the list just goes on and on and on. And one of the things that I do personally is I look for stories and research that's done at a very, very high level of science that the mainstream media ignores, and I put it in films and get it out to the world.
Well, and you do a good job doing that, that's for sure. Okay. So you are convinced that there are other universes out there? Are there, you know, intelligent beings, you think, in those universes?
Oh, I think there are, like Dante Alighieri saw, that all of the nine planets were inhabited by spiritual beings, and so did Emanuel Swedenborg, and so did Pythagoras. Again, with the increase in technology peering into the invisible, I think we're going to find that most of the planets have some type of, whether even they're energetic bodies of light or they're actual spiritual beings that are, some of them are even humanoid-looking that I have seen with my own eyes. I think we're not alone everywhere. I think our dimension right now in our DNA and our ability to perceive is so limited that we think we're alone, but we're really not.
We're far from that.
Far from alone.
Shadow beings, do you think they're from other dimensions?
Well, your original question, I mean, it has now become accepted in classical new theory and physics that we live in a multiverse. In fact, I saw an article recently published on how many different universes there are. When I saw the number, this was done at Stanford, I believe. I have this bookmark somewhere. It was a number so staggering, it'd be enough if we had three other universes on top of the universe we have now. But they had calculated mathematically, you know, physicists, the number of universes they gave us were so infinite to calculate that how could you argue the existence of the paranormal and spiritual beings in other dimensions? I mean, physicists are totally catching up to this stuff now.
Yeah, they are. And it's amazing how quickly they are coming up with what we would have said were supernatural theories years ago.
Oh, yeah, and they're, you know, guys like Gary Schwartz, I mean, I just heard this recently, he always has somebody at NASA or the military who sees something on a camera in the invisible, and they come to him and they say, "What is this, Gary?" They come to the, you know, the Harvard-Yale psychiatrist who believes in spiritual stuff, and he'll say, "Oh, yeah, we know what that is." And they help him out. But now I'm hearing in the grapevine that Gary's onto something huge. I don't believe he has gone public with it yet. That it has happened on, again, the major scientific communities have come to him. And I cannot wait to find out what that is.
All right. Well, what we will do next hour, how is a fast program. We'll take phone calls with David Sirita right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back.
I know. From the Gateway to the West, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, toll-free, dial 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, toll-free at 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George at area code 818-501-4721. And the wildcard line is open at area code 818-501-4109. International callers may reach George Norrie by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Okay, we're going to take your phone calls this hour now with David Cerita. So get ready. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. A good radio can be hard to come by, but if you appreciate high-performance radio, then you should try Seacrane CC Radio SW. Now, the CC Radio SW is a 12-inch portable that has all the adjustments and filters necessary for excellent performance under various conditions. The CC Radio SW delivers excellent AM, FM, and shortwave reception, has the twin coil ferrite antenna built in for superior AM. It's very sensitive, and it's a selective type radio. It has 50 memories, you preset them, and has the bass and treble for great audio, and has large, easy-to-read display that's really cool, too, at night when you're stumbling around. And it runs on batteries or has an AC adapter included. You can order the CC Radio SW for only $149.95 by calling C. Crane in the morning at 1-800-522-8863. Here's that number again, 1-800-522-8863, or you can go online at ccradio.com. And welcome back. We're with David Cerita and your phone calls this hour. David, any traveling in your future?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a yoga retreat in Santa Cruz for the New Year.
Yoga retreat? What is that?
Well, with it, my first spiritual master that I ever studied meditation with from India, and he really opened the door for me spiritually. So he's almost 90 now and just a brilliantly enlightened being. Beautiful,
right.
Beautiful being, so, yeah. I have one correction. At Stanford University, according to them, we're doing 720,000 kilometers an hour around the galactic center, which is about 450 miles an hour. I mean, 450,000 miles an hour, sorry.
All right.
That's
off
our speed.
Just a little bit. Another zero, right?
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. International line in Montreal. Peter, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Peter.
Good evening, George. Good evening, David. Just two quick questions. The first question is the quantum leap you're talking about that has gone before, that we've gone through before, and the next one we're coming to. Is that going to change anything in our physical aspects, like being from Neanderthal, then we became this? Is something else coming up?
Well,
just the next question, just so get off and I'll have you guys continue, is that what do you think of the new books that Nostradamus, they found or something? Thank you.
Okay. And I think John Hogue was talking about the new books of Nostradamus. Really not too much. He was well aware of those quatrains for some time. David, do you
want to... Well, I think, you know, what actually may explain this sudden leap in evolution that nobody has ever explained in evolution theories is that we may have at that period crossed one of these what I'm calling giant galactic shells. And when that happens, knowledge transforms radically. And so, of course, does civilization. And so does the human body itself actually change. And we can see from studying, you know, the evolution of species on the planet, and I'm kind of a strong believer in the Zechariah Sitchin theory. I've read all of his books. But this missing, you know, evolution leap, that may have been, one of the great sudden transformations we're talking about. And I love the caller's question because it just made me think of that. That's pretty brilliant. That maybe we know in fruit fly larvae, for example, if you expose different types of radiation to fruit flies, they radically transform in their next generation of offspring. They become something completely different as far as there's a radical transformation of the mutation level of the DNA, at the DNA level. And also in the film Water, The Great Mystery, there's my favorite part in the whole movie is when they expose this ultra weak field to these fish, and their offspring develop what are called phenotype changes. They develop spots and rainbow stripes that were not in the previous generation in one single generation, because they were exposed to this very, very gentle cosmic radiation. And so our DNA is the same way. We know that if, of course, you can expose our DNA to harmful radiation like Chernobyl or these type of things, and you'll see a negative side effect. But if it's harmonic, beautifully harmonized cosmic radiation, our DNA will evolve for the greater. And if we jump this shell in 2012, we're already in the middle of jumping the shell, you may see genius levels in the next generation that suddenly, you know, will be traveling to distant star systems in a very, very short period of time. And that may not be, people may say, oh, we just, you know, had a quantum leap in understanding. But again, when you understand how biological systems and DNA responds to fields, all of the data is consistent that if you put different types of frequencies and harmonic codes in the presence, water or biological life forms, they transform. And it's wonderful to see it happening at that level. So we know that may be what the Mayans have said, that this is a shift, and the shift is going to be incredibly positive. There might be some environmental disasters in the process, but that's just part of a cleansing, you know, and a transformation. Any transformation has a destructive, you know, side to it before it rebuilds the new.
Well, you know, I was going to say, what if this destructive nature, David, is far more vast than we can imagine, much like, let's say, the 2012 movie?
Well, now, the 2012 movie, a lot of people think is very, very far off, but again, you know, in my e-book on the quantum electrodynamics in 2012, I give really accurate data on what NASA is reporting, you know, play by play. We can just keep going through the data, and you can see what's likely to happen. I mean, I have this amazing photograph of a subatomic particle called a muon that goes into this higher and higher frequency spin. And the muon has a mass of, let's say, 100 million electron volts. So that's a number, and what it means is it's quite a heavy particle. And as it goes into higher and higher frequency orbits, it doesn't get heavier, such as in a black hole. It gets lighter, and suddenly it disappears, and an electron and positron is born with a mass of 0.51 MeV. I mean, literally a fraction. It's reduced so much of its mass, it's become almost light. And then Paul Dirac, when he discovered the Nobel Prize winners, that when electrons or positrons decay into even higher frequency orbits, they literally disappear and go into as if another universe or dimension. So once again, you think of the question, if the solar system and our biological organisms go into a higher frequency, they're therefore exposed to higher frequency harmonic fields, which will transform our DNA, exactly like David Wilcock was talking about on your show.
Let's go to Laughlin, Nevada. Stephen, welcome to Coast, around with David Sarita. Go ahead, Stephen.
Okay. David, very interesting show. I've been really enjoying listening to it tonight. And I just wanted to know, when you mentioned beings from other universes earlier in the show, what role do you think that they'll have? Specifically, do you believe reptilian humanoids will have any role in the events of 2012?
Hmm.
Well, you know, I compare scripture, you know, and what, you know, the transformation, for example, in the Bible, the new earth, the dark forces or the negative forces will no longer have dominion on this planet. When I superimpose our solar system on top of an electron, you know, proton pair just sitting there, we look at, we are about one-third of the way from the outer perimeter of the galaxy, going into the next third, and then the final third being the highest frequency dimension. Now, in the spiritual model, all of the great religions of the world have three major arcana. You have, you know, in Hinduism, you have the hell planets, or the warfaring planets, or the outmost region. And then the next dimension is the paradise planets. And notice that Jesus says that Earth will turn into a paradise Earth. And the next dimension is the enlightened planet. Like in the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, you have Hiranyaloka, these super high-energy, super cosmic planets where the super luminal beings live, the super light beings live. So if that's true, Well, you put that on top of, you know, the electron-positron model, and you see, well, if you divide the shells of the different orbits of electrons around a proton, you kind of see something very, very similar. And you start out with a very low frequency or much heavier mass particle where everything is much more dense and gross, which you would say that's where the warfaring planets. And we, you know, we've gone through a long history of war on our planet, but we're not fighting as an entire species all the time. And if we make this leap in through this shell or gateway in the galaxy, and again, shells are invisible in subatomic particles and atoms, and I believe they are invisible in the galaxy, but we will see them with these new super cameras. When you go in there, it's kind of like you're going into a new dimension, and sorry, these negative energies can't be here anymore. You will have to go to the lower dimension as a soul and reside there to work out your karma because you want to fight in wars. Sorry, Earth is going into a paradise dimension now. And I go back to Black Elk's, you know, conundrum when he said the sun, according to the Lakota, will produce a fire so great it will burn the souls of the evil or the destructive and the less evolved, and those who are spiritually pure will not even feel the fire. So that starts to help answer, you know, how maybe we can get an answer to what he's talking about.
Next up, we go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Stephanie, thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a question.
Sure.
I heard you were talking about a dream you had, and I was thinking that the number 9 was interesting that you related to it, because I also have felt that that something beyond our perception is trying to deliver messages to us through symbols. And I've been noticing the number 27, which in numerology adds down to 9. And I researched it a bit, and it also is 3 times 3 times 3, 3 to the third power. Mm-hmm. And other people are noticing the number 27 and can't seem to explain the phenomenon, but just wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, and John Lennon, as you know, that was his number.
Exactly. We intuit numbers because everything, Pythagoras says, music, everything, vibration, all breaks down to numbers. And beyond frequencies, I've discovered are harmonic codes. And my work in harmonic codes have exploded lately. I've discovered that a code that is far more prevalent in nature than the fractal Fibonacci sequence. I have found the 1.1111 now in galaxies. I found it in the hexagon on Saturn's pole. I found it in flowers. I found it in muons. I'm finding the 1.11 is probably the mother of all codes. And if you take your calculator and you take 1.11111111 and you square it, which is just times its it equals 1.234567. See, it's giving birth to all of the other sequences. I believe in the Big Bang we started with two big zeros, and the first code they produced was the 1.1111. I look at the spiral arms on a very flat, near 90-degree plane of a spiraling galaxy, and I measure the wavelength of the two different major spirals, and I divide the numbers into each other. And you don't need actual size to get harmonic ratios. You only need scale models. I got the 1.111. I mean, I was literally just blown away. I'm seeing it everywhere now, and I believe that is the mother of all codes. Now, when you see numbers in your dreams, as the caller is talking about, there's a meaning to that. And the nines right now, we see what happened in the Norway spiral. It was December the 9th, 2009, and we see the 9.333 in the math and the ratios that I discovered in it. That it cannot be a coincidence. It just simply cannot. And possibly the Norway spiral is the next dimension of where we learn from crop circles, and we learn a lot about sacred geometry and math and higher frequency dimensions in crop circles. And now maybe we're going to go to the next dimension of our understanding.
David, what's your take on the Big Bang? What do you think really happened?
Well, it's really complex. I mean, there's inflation theories and Big Bang theories, but Big Bang theories basically, this gets really, really deep, George. It's in singularity. Imagine there's a place where everything, space, time, energy, everything has a value of absolute zero. And at the point of zero, because there's no time, there's no way to measure anything. But as soon as you have a duality and two different waves, two giant spheres collide into each other, they produce resistance. And as soon as you get resistance in a system, an infinitum of zero time slows down because of the resistance, and time is born. Alan Guth at MIT said that no one, and Stephen Hawking has said, no one has been able to explain the moment before the Big Bang or even the moment of the Big Bang, only millifractions of time after it. And that is because there is no time at singularity, which is the center of a black hole is also where there is a great singularity. And I believe that is, instead of a black hole, I think what's really in the center of every galaxy is a what we call a singularity, which is an ultra frequency dimension where consciousness, what William Tiller calls subtle energy and dark matter and all of the forces merge into one big zero. And when these two zeros collided, I believe they produced the 1.111 harmonic code, and then it squared and it started producing all sorts of other numbers and different harmonic codes. And everything in nature, I have done harmonic code measurements on a pyrite cube or a quartz crystal or a natural, you know, ruby, and everything has its own numbers, proprietary numbers to what that creation element is. Everything in the periodic table has its own codes. And so you look for how did the great, you know, composer at the center of the galaxy create everything. It did it with numbers. And,
Okay, let's go to Butte, Montana. West of the Rockies, Michael is up. Go ahead, Michael.
Hello. Hey, I was wondering, Edgar Cayce talked about Armageddon being fought not on Earth, but in space or in the heavens, and against souls leaving the Earth and souls trying to come back to the Earth. I'd like to know what you think about that. And then I wanted to bring your attention to one other thing real quick. Was on Brad Steiger's book, Atlantis Rising, on page 190, he talks about this lady, the Aquarian Revelations, and this space entity, Oxo, that she's channeled, this Robin McPherson. And that's all about vibrations. And the one thing that really struck me was that it says that our vibrationary rate will be stepped up, but that do not allow yourself to become crystallized, is what it says. For each man has a shattering point if he continues to resist the flow of dimensional evolution. And I wouldn't mind hearing what you thought about that.
Okay, let's take that one first, David, then we'll talk about Edgar Cayce.
Well, the last part of the question, I mean, I don't know about, I mean, I know a lot about Edgar Cayce, but I'm not an expert on him, so I'm not going to answer the first question. But the second question, you know, again, think of a circuit. We have, you know, you have a blender, you have a toaster, and then you have, you know, a little tiny little light bulb. Everything requires a certain amount of electricity to operate, including the human body. We are electrical systems. If you put too much energy in a system, you will shatter it, more than it can handle. So that's why you have circuit protectors, and that's why you have transformers. Power transformers restrict the flow of energy into a circuit. And the universe kind of works the same way, and so do atoms. That's why they have shells. Shells are like buffer zones that don't allow too much energy to flow into different circuits. They know how much energy a particular circuit can handle. And what I, you know, when we look at, you know, God in the Old Testament, the God of the Hebrews, he told the people not to go past the markers on the mountain, otherwise they would die. They would fry. That's because this particular God was so powerful electronically that if you came too close to its field and you were not purified, it would destroy you or shatter you. And even in the hereafter, I mean, I was begging God to stop. The levels of love and ecstasy in the higher heavens are so overwhelming beyond your wildest dreams. Utterly make every human experience seem utterly boring. I mean, literally. But you realize that if a soul isn't ready, they couldn't go and reside in those heavens because there's too much cosmic energy there. They're just not ready. They have not been purified to handle that. So, in a way, the caller's question is, you know, when you're talking about, yes, there will be a shift. When your vibration raises in a system, it can handle more energy because the higher the frequency a system is, the higher the frequency, the greater the energy. So there you go. And the greater the frequency of a system, the less it gets affected by energy. For example, if I emit blue photons at a little cell. The blue photons, if the little biological cell is fragile, are going to harm it far more because it transfers more electromagnetism into the cell than red photons will. So if that little system can only handle red right now, then that's all you should give it. It won't survive with blue because blue is just simply too powerful for it. So the higher heavens are work kind of in a very, very similar way, I believe.
David, what led you on this path? Something happened.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you asked me where I was going for traveling, and it was, you know, I grew up in the 60s in Berkeley, California, when our family moved from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, so I'm Canadian by birth. And my mom and dad divorced because in the 60s they just had too many different ideas, and my mom became an attorney. And, you know, my uncle is a Superior Court judge, and my dad became a psychologist.
In that pushable, we'll let you finish that up when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.
Everything turn. There is a season turn. And there's time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to to everything turn, turn.
That's great, it starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I am a hurricane, listen to yourself. Turn world, serve its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up, an ox, speak, grunt, no stream. The ladder starts to clatter with fear, fight down. High wire and a fire representing seven games in the government for hire. The fury's beating down your neck. Team IT reporters babble Trump, Devin Croft. Look at that, no plane, fine, then. Uh-oh, overflow, population common food, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve your own needs. Listen to your heartbeat, dummy, with the rapture and the reverend, the right, right. You patriotic, patriotic, slam, fight, right, my feeling, pretty sight.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
From somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free, 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Well, as we get rolling into your holiday week, next hour we'll have open lines here, but when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with you and our special guest, David Cerita, right here on Coast to Coast AM. So, David, before we go to calls, you were talking about how your dad was a psychologist, and I assume then that had a bearing on the direction you took with your career.
Well, dramatically. My stepfather, David Cooper, was a scientist, so I was a Cooper for nearly a decade. But then when I became Cerita, my real name, which is a Ukrainian name, my dad, you know, dragged me to this yoga retreat with the very master that I'm going to go see in the new year.
Uh-huh.
And I had no belief in any of this stuff. I was very, very angry as a you know, 12-year-old, 13-year-old at that time, and because I didn't have access to my mom anymore, and my dad was making me become a vegetarian, and he's just a brilliant psychologist, far, far ahead of his time. One of the early pioneers of American psychologists who traveled to the Far East, And so I went to this yoga retreat, and in the middle of the night I got, you know, the paralysis. I was sleeping 10, and the paralysis was crawling up my legs, and it grabbed my waist, and I thought, man, this looks like, this is kind of scary, but I thought, oh, this is kind of cool, too. I mean, I can't move. I couldn't move my neck, and then I couldn't move my arms, and I just, everything went pitch black, and three blindingly bright blue shining beings appeared in front of me. Rama, Sita, and Hanuman, for those people who know who they are. And I'd never even seen a picture of these Hindu gods. I had no idea who they were. And the next morning, I mean, they were really blindingly bright. I couldn't move my body, but I could see them. And I told the guru, and I said, who were they? And one of the students, you know, Trent, because he doesn't speak, he writes on a chalkboard. And he said, oh, that was Hanuman, Rama, and Sita. And I said, who are they? So they took me and they showed me a picture in a book. And I went, wow, I really lucked out on my first day of meditation class. So at that point, I knew this was all real. And by the time I was 18, I was meditating every single day and studying many different techniques. And since then, it's over 30 years ago, I have been meditating every single day and doing all sorts of different amazing, you know, techniques for personal transformation.
Good for you. Let's go to the phones again. Warren, Ohio we go. Bob, you're up with us. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I'm listening on 570 WKBN.
Super.
I have a few comments, I guess. I've been listening to you and Art since 95, and up until 3 years ago, that's all I've been doing is just listening. Well, you had mentioned something about October 29th, David, and
right.
I was baptized 3 years ago, October 29th, 2006.
Wow.
A week before that, I had a vision. I know it's a vision because it stuck with me, and I know it wasn't a daydream, because I've daydreamed hundreds of hours, you know, through school and whatnot, but it stuck with me, and it only lasted a second, but I laid on my bed for an hour deciphering everything that I just seen in that split second. And I've seen people on fire like you were talking about. And what I believe that is, it's a warning for after the rapture. See, I got a bunch of stuff mixed in. I don't know if it's before or after the rapture, which is not the rapture at all. It's the harvest. We're calling it the wrong thing because the word rapture is not even in the Bible. Anyhow, that's a warning for God's people. I believe, like I said, it's after the rapture to know the good people from the bad. And I've seen some people with just fire in their eyes, and then their whole head would be on fire. And our movements were really fast. And I've concluded the closer we get to the second coming, the faster everything's going to get. Our movements, everything. I have a prediction, actually two of them. First, I believe coast to coast is going to be on the air during the day, for at least a week, because I believe Rush Limbaugh owes you a favor, so because it's going to come that important, your show. Because now, like I said, I used to just listen. Now, at times, your show drives me nuts because of everything I've seen and heard in the last 3 years. And I also have a prediction about 2012. And after I say this, it could happen at any time. And this is going to make a lot of sense to both of you. On or before 2012, this is what's going to happen. And everyone's saying this, but they're not. Everyone's, everywhere I've read or listened to, they've been, they're always harping about the Antichrist and the rapture. But before any of those two things happen, something happens before that has to happen. And that's the first seal being broken. That's what's going to happen. Now, just think of this for a moment. When that happens, it says everyone in heaven, on earth, and in the sea, we're all going to say one thing. It's going to be honor and glory to the Father and to the one that sits on the throne forever and ever.
Amen. All right, let's get your take on this. Some have said the seals are already broken. David, have you heard that?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, this is kind of, the callers, you know, talked about seeing the people on fire. Last night I dreamt about the red phone. And I was looking at the red phone and going, you know, I know what that means. And then I saw a bunch of red phones sitting in front of water. And I thought, wow, well, you know, we know that water communicates and can receive a message. But the red phone means was the phone that the president picked up that was a direct line to the Kremlin in Russia.
Meaning we got a problem.
And, yeah, meaning we got a problem between us. But then I saw many red phones, like every nation had a red phone. And then I saw through a thermal imaging camera, everybody was had a fever. Everybody was running hot. And I don't know what that means, but the caller just called in. May have given me, you know, given me a little idea. You know, the way the native Indian, the Indians, you know, they have traditional meetings all over the planet today, and they share dreams and visions. And whenever a great number of them have the exact same information, the dream, and they don't have any way of influencing each other, you know, to create the same dreams, they really pay attention to it. And, you know, the caller called in, there are some synchronicities there for sure.
Next up, we go to the big island of Hawaii, Pahoa. HD is up with us, first-time caller. Go ahead, HD.
Aloha, gentlemen. Good evening.
Hi. You too.
George, I must give you my highest compliments on your interviewing style. I love your program very much, and you're very, very kind.
Thank you.
David, by what means are you viewing protons and neutrons and electrons?
I look at bubble chamber photographs and scintillation counter photographs of their orbits, and I, you know, for example, I take a photograph of an electron positron, and I had always suspected that the missing particle, the graviton, was in the differential between the electron and the positron, and I blow them up to a large scale, way bigger than the original photograph. And I take the positron diameter at 120 millimeters, so you're really, really accurate, and the electron diameter is at 90 millimeters, and the ratio that it produces, you know, inversely, clockwise and counterclockwise, is 1.33333, the same number that the that my wife gave me in the dream did. Now, I studied with quantum physicists and particle physicists, and I worked for major nuclear scientists for over 10 years of my life, so I have a lot of experience, and I've studied a lot of particle physics, and I have seen where the missing data is and the missing theoretical, the fudging that they do, and where things just don't seem to add up. And I work for, you know, months and months at a time on trying to solve just one little problem. So I look at real photographs, real data. It's not theoretical data.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, too. Next, we go to British Columbia, Canada. Jerry, take it away.
Hi. I'm just wondering, everybody gives a lot of credence to what the Aztec people or whoever it was that predicted 2012 being like a big thing happening, something happening. I'm just wondering why everybody believes everything they believe in when they sacrifice so many people and stuff. And they're pretty barbaric, actually, by today's standards. And, you know, we kind of listen to everything they say, oh, the world's coming to an end or something's coming in 2012. Well, why do we put so much into it when these people are so barbaric, actually? And that's my question. Thank you.
Great question. You know, we study everything. You know, we look at ancient cultures and we look at ancient knowledge, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have the same barbaric rituals in our own, you know, modern religions. And, you know, there are things happening even today that might even shock the current caller that our current religions are doing behind closed doors. So, yes, I mean, I definitely don't believe in human sacrifices, that's for darn sure, nor animal sacrifices for that matter. But nevertheless, there is, you know, what you do is when you do mantra is repetition of cycles. You know, in Buddhist meditation, you watch the breath go in, the breath go out. You do this millions of times throughout your practice. Every time you re-study a cycle, you learn something from it that you missed. And I literally believe in the Stone Age, and I have scientific data to prove this. We went from the Stone Age, you know, to the Iron Age or the Bronze Age, and then we come into, you know, massive leaps in understanding, and we reach the industrial age, and then we reach, you know, where we are today, the computer and high technology age. But there are things we missed in each of those ages. And by going backwards and combing through it like combing your hair, you start to find out there was a lot that we left behind that we can learn again. And every time we go through and studying these great cycles and great periods of knowledge, we can accelerate in our current age. So whether they were considered barbaric by your standards or not, I think current around there are many atrocities, even in Christianity today, that are just simply outrageous and atrocities in all of the great religions of the world, actually. And I don't think anybody's innocent. Nevertheless, there is brilliance there. And we are getting better. We really are getting better, even though there are times when we think that we're really not. We're just destroying ourselves. But we are actually getting better.
Okay, we go to San Francisco now. Cesar, San Francisco, we go. Hi.
Hey, George. Hey, David. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you. David, I wanted to run a theory by you. I was thinking maybe human beings are actually beings of thought, and maybe, like, we decided to use the human form to come to this planet to experience it, you know, just the way it is, and maybe it was just, I don't know, I feel like the human beings are the aliens on this planet, and they just decided to take the human form to experience it and just experience everything that it had to give. I was wondering what your thoughts on that was.
Sounds like a great theory to me. I mean, there are so many people who call into your show because, you know, I listen from time to time. There's, to me, there's more interesting people out there than I see in mainstream media. Just listening to, you know, callers calling in. You must have so much fun doing that.
All the time, David. All the time. It never stops. It never stops. What is so? Well, as we approach 2012, I mean, what are we going to see in 2010? What are we going to see in 2011? What are we going to see in the early stages of 2012?
Well, NASA's already seeing the possible, you know, awakening of the solar maximum happening. There's two new, they've updated their data. They were originally at 2012-ish, and they were arguing between 2010 and 2012. And again, scientists never agree on anything. So when somebody tells you that, no, that guy's wrong because it's like this, actually all they do is fight. But out of their fighting comes brilliance. And they've now updated two windows from 2011 to 2012. 2013, about the next solar maximum. But there's no doubt the sun, according to NASA's data, it's very possible to see trillions of dollars of damage in these solar flares that could happen in this next big event.
Shut out the grill.
There's no doubt. I mean, the movie 2012 might be a little extreme. It's possible to heat up the core of the planet. But I actually, when I look at quantum systems, they're looking at the sun as if it's going to stay the same the way it was in the past. Because we're traveling around the galactic core at 450,000 miles an hour, and which is you know, millions of miles a day, there's nobody who knows. Nobody can tell you what fields we're going to encounter and how they're going to affect the sun. There's nobody who can tell you that. But one thing we know, what I love about using the quantum model, is the quantum orbits happen so fast that it's kind of like a speeding up a time clock. If it's right, if you superimpose it on the greater cosmic model, we know what's going to happen. The Earth is going to go into a higher frequency dimension. It will still be in the galaxy, but it's not going to be the same, and the sun will not be the same.
Jonathan in Atlanta, you're up with us. Go ahead, Jonathan.
George, David, good evening.
Hi.
David, what you said about 2012, I hope that movie is more than a little extreme.
Really.
And as we approach cycle 24 and we begin to see the activity on the sun, I hope this show, Coast to Coast, which is a catalyst for world transformation, it's that powerful a show, and I hope the collective intent of its listeners will help maybe ameliorate any possible catastrophic change we might experience in raising our consciousness and focusing our intent. Get that comment out of the way. David, you're one of my favorite guests. I don't know if you're familiar with the works of Irving Laszlo or Thomas Campbell, a former guest on Coast to Coast. Thomas Campbell, it sounds like he's walked a very similar path to you. He's a nuclear physicist, and he worked the early days with the Monroe Institute, helping develop the hemisync technology.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book about his big theory of everything called My Big Toe. It's a trilogy. I think you would find it fascinating, and any type of collaboration between you and him, and maybe getting you and guys like him and Irving Laszlo on Coast together would be a great show, George. But my question, he's talking about eliminating duality within us. Now, I know in Eastern traditions, this has been a focus of many different spiritual traditions of the East, and to a lesser degree in the West. I mean, the parable of the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or duality in the Christian tradition, denotes that we should move toward being entrapped in duality to consuming the fruit from the tree of life and moving into unity with this great consciousness, this intelligence that we're all part of. And you mentioned, talking about physics, William Tiller in the sequel to What the Bleak Do We Know, Down the Rabbit Hole, he made an amazing statement that just confounded me. He said, there's more energy trapped within the volume of a single hydrogen atom, I guess at the Planck scale, I don't understand this, it's enough energy to create a whole new universe, up to 20 billion light years trapped within one hydrogen atom. I guess that's what you're talking about, this singularity that exists in all life, all matter, that we have access to.
Well, Jesus said in Matthew 6:24, and I be single, which is non-duality, thy whole body shall be filled with light. And actually, you're wrong. The God of the Old Testament, warns us not to take in the knowledge of good and evil, for if we do, we will die. And the problem is, theologians inadvertently took the side of the serpent, thinking it was a good thing to take in the knowledge of good and evil. Well, what happens is, because we don't understand polarity matrices very well, there's nothing wrong with duality if the polarities are in harmony with each other. But the way the ego works is it says, well, my religion's right and yours is wrong, or my interpretation of my religion is right and yours is wrong, and then we have wars. And so that's the danger of polarity matrices, is when the ego only wants to see one side. It puts itself in one position rather than seeing the whole sphere, the whole polarity. And if you can be in harmony with polarity matrices, if you really read the book of Genesis really, really deeply, you'll see that God goes, oh my God, they're going to take in this knowledge of good and evil, but until they understand it properly, when they do, they will become as one of us. They will become as gods. And to understand it properly is to understand polarity matrices as harmonies rather than disagreements. It has to be one way or the other way. It cannot be, you know, both ways.
David, thank you so much for being on the program. David Cerrito, when we come right back, it'll be an hour of open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Gateway to the West. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. to reach George from west of the Rockies toll-free, dial 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies toll-free at 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George at area code 818-501-4721. And the wildcard line is open at area code 818-501-4109. International callers may reach George Norrie by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Okay, we're going to have open lines for you now for the rest of this hour. Let's make it somewhat holiday-ish, if you would, even though it's open lines. So whatever you want to chat about will go. Perhaps you want to talk about your own miracles. That story in Kansas was incredible about that individual who saw that six-year-old girl hit by a car that was backing up, rolled over her. He picked up the car, saved her, was never able to do it again. Isn't that amazing? So we'll have open lines for you when we come back on Coast to Coast Day On. Hey, did you know that for the very first time in 9 years, central banks around the world are expected to buy more gold than they sell? And just recently, India bought an extra 200 tons of gold, driving the price up more than 5% in just a matter of weeks. Now come reports, some say that they'd like to buy more. So how high can gold go? One expert puts gold at maybe $2,900 an ounce. Savvy investors are including gold in their IRA and savings account. You might want to call Lear Capital, the exclusive gold company of Coast to Coast AM, at 1-800-474-4259 and pick up the free report on the massive deficit, inflation, and how to invest in gold. It's an insider report that the feds hope you'll never see. Lear Capital, the most trusted name in gold. 1-800-474-4259. That's 1-800-474-4259. They'll get this free kit right out to you, and it's good reading material. Pass it around to your friends as well. 1-800-474-4259. And again, as you know by now, we will have live programs for you on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night. And most program directors are now well aware of it. We've sent our special blasts to them. But I also wanted to thank you for calling your own specific station about that, because some of the stations just weren't aware of it. And they have decided, yes, all right, of course, we're going to have live programming instead of Christmas music all night long. So we've got a lot of interesting things for you on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, some special guests, and your open lines as well. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Greg in Lake Forest, California, on the wild card line. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning, George. How you doing?
Good. Not bad. How about you?
Oh, great. You know, I've been listening to you for years, but I've been trying to get in. I finally got through, and I'm so glad I did.
Super.
Hey, I've got a question for you about 2012 and what you think it will do to world religion. For example, do you think it will vindicate world religions in some way, or maybe even cause them to change completely?
Probably none of the above. I think what is going to happen, my take on 2012, talking to so many people and then just simply Greg coming up with my own conclusions, I think the Mayans were onto something celestial. They understood astronomy. It has to do with the sun. And I think something's going to happen with the sun, whether we get hit with an X flare or we're in that sun solar cycle. Whatever it is, it's going to be tied into the sun. I don't think it's going to affect religions at all. Do you?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure. I think honestly that it would probably have a lot a big effect on the way people think about religion, just by the fact that, I mean, if something big happens with the sun, you know, I mean, the sun has always been an important symbol in religion. And so, you know, I was just curious about that. I thought maybe that might have something to do with it.
Have you noticed, though, that more and more people seem to be whacked out lately? I mean, they're just not acting right.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny because I was actually thinking about that earlier today. You know, it seems, you know, you hear a lot about the dumbing down of America and things like that today, and you know, that's kind of getting into politics. But at the same time, you know, yeah, I mean, I do notice that people don't quite seem to be all there these days like they used to.
It's all over the place. You know, maybe some of it has to do with the tension because of the holidays. But, you know, people are, I witnessed almost three accidents just today. One car pulling over, the other car didn't see it. I had the honk. The driver finally said, somebody's honking at me. Why? Pulled over back into their lane. They would have sideswiped each other. But I've seen this happen more and more. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Billy, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Billy.
Good morning. Happy holidays.
You too.
You know, in many of your shows, you talked about these RFID chips.
Yes.
And you never tell anybody how they can disable them. And I was wondering, is there a way to disable or destroy these chips?
You smash them. That's the only way right now. You know, there's been some talk that one day the sinister ones may try to put these chips in our vaccines. And, of course, I don't take vaccines. But that really, you know, the only way to disable them, they're so small, Billy. They're like the size of a grain of rice, some even smaller. You know, if you ever get one, I would just step on it. You know, that's the only thing you can do. Okay. Have you ever seen one?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. And, you know, there are some in clothes, of course. I don't think you have to worry about breaking that, but if you want to, go ahead. Let's go to Newcastle, Pennsylvania. Lynn, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good.
Ready for Christmas?
Just about. I work up until the last minute, and we work a lot of overtime, so it's really hard.
I do the same thing. And, you know, we got our shows, so make sure you're listening those
days. I will. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Children's International. I went home one morning about 6 weeks ago, and I remembered to do it. I said, oh, let me do it. And I just want people to know it's really quick and painless. It takes less than a minute, and I only type with two fingers. And you get feedback within, like, 5 minutes, and I decided to use my MasterCard PayPal. It's only $22 a month, and it just was simple, and I just wish people would go ahead and do it. If you only need 95 and you got millions of listeners, I hope they go ahead and do it.
Absolutely. Well, actually, it's down to, like, 71 now.
Oh, good. Great.
And, you know, it's only for a one-year commitment. We hope everyone renews for them, but if they don't want to, you know, they've got the sponsorship for the child for a year. And, you know, I've got to tell you, Lynn, the money, as small as it might seem to us, it really goes a long ways for these kids.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It is. And I already got correspondence back. I got my name's Lynn, and I got a little girl in Philippines, and her name's Angel Lynn. Is that cute or what? And then
that is.
She writes in pencil to me. How cute is that?
So did you get a little? Did you get a picture with it?
Yes, and she's beautiful.
Yeah,
just beautiful.
And you know what's going to be remarkable? Maybe one day, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, she might find you and say, "You know what? Thank you for that."
I only want to thank you. I just would sure love to meet her. She's just a beautiful child. You know?
Yeah, that is so cool. Well, thanks for calling.
Sure.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
You too. Huntington
Bye-bye.
Beach we go now. It's Tim's turn in California. Tim, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I had a question about the, I've been noticing a lot of Illuminati symbols and Freemason symbols have been showing up in performances by different musicians and in films the past year or so, and I was wondering if you could explain what that is and are they actually a part of that group?
We will have Jordan Maxwell on in the not-too-distant future, probably January, maybe February. And, of course, he's the expert in symbolism in the occult, for sure. I think you're right. I'm beginning to notice some of these symbols as well popping up. Maybe it's because people are talking about it, and it's a craze right now, and so they're more aware of it. I don't know. Or maybe there's a message out there, a hidden message that they're aware of, some kind of clue game that they're trying to pass on people as well. But I'll ask Jordan that when he's on, because he's the best for that. Let's go to Ojai in California. Hello, Joy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Merry Christmas to
you
all.
You too.
So
have you been good this year? Is Santa going to be good to you, Joy?
I have been very good. You know, so many good things have come my way this past week. Baked cookies, candies. I can't begin to tell you how many lovely things have come my way. But the one thing I wanted to say tonight, George, was I've been listening since 1983 or 84, And tonight was just the most amazing program I think I've ever heard.
Really? Well, David's a genius, first of all.
It's full of synchronicity. And your guest, David, was just awesome. Awesome. Just, I mean, my head is just spinning. You know, I quantum physics and everything he talked about, I felt like the roof came off of my little apartment tonight. I just felt like the whole universe opened up to me. And, of course, you know, this word synchronicity came into my mind. I just felt like I had to call you and tell you, like, I agree with all of your listeners. I feel that we are all together.
Well, you know, we are, and it's working. And this Friday session where people use prayer or consciousness, call it what you want, it works for people. It is amazing what's happening.
And not so much the things that we want, but just if we, like, make a conscious, like he was talking about settling back and being quiet, you know, when he was talking about when he went to the Far East to be with the Masters, and that when he was 12 years old, he had that experience. And then again in 1986, he had the another experience. And I think these things happen to us over periods of times. Like on some of the programs I listen to on Coast to Coast, people will say, well, I had this experience with the UFOs in 1972, for instance. And there'll be a long period of, like, what would seem like long to us, like 30 years or so, but which is really nothing if you stop to think about the infinite sea.
Well, and you talk about that. Talk about time as well, Joy. I mean, here we are coming up to the end of another year. Can you believe we're going into 2010? I mean, at what point in your life did you ever think about that year? That seems so far out into the future. I was born in 1950. You know, 1963, Kennedy was killed. 69, we land on the moon. I'm 13, I'm 19. And to think about 2010, there was no way. I never thought that far. Never in my dreams. But here we are. I mean, it's here. It's truly amazing the way time goes by. So I'm glad that I believe that there's more than just this physical realm. Albany, New York. Steve, you're on Coast to Coast. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you again, George.
You too.
I have two things. Second thing is if I have time. But the first thing is, aren't the planets going to be aligned during 2012?
You know, they were saying that, but most astronomers tell me no, that's not going to happen. There will be, there could be a galactic alignment, but not with the planets.
Okay, because if there was a planetary alignment, you'd have Mercury and Venus between us and the next class.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
Second thing is, I think I know where dark matter is, and I'm going to try to make it as simple and fast as possible.
Right.
There was an experiment about 10 years ago where they took a particle and sent it faster than the speed of light, and it arrived before it was sent. Okay, now taking an idea of a bottle rocket to a space rocket, the more power you put behind something, the faster it will get.
Right.
Okay? You put it they were talking about atomic engines, okay, trying to get things faster than speed of light. Now, if you have the Big Bang, most of the matter is going to be propelled out of that at faster than the speed of light. It's inevitable. So maybe some of that matter is pushed into another time frame. Nothing can slow it down. It'll pass through things. You will not have critical mass. Okay, it'll pass through things like a neutrino. You cannot have critical mass like Einstein predicted. Okay, because if it's traveling faster than speed of light, it's out of time sync. It can't reach critical mass. Nothing can slow it down. So it's out. Most of this mass is stuff from like black exploding stars, the Big Bang, and things that may have been pushed out of our time frame, but it would still have gravitation, it will still have all sorts of things. And if it does slow down for any reason, maybe it may stay out of time sync.
Well, that could be. And I'm convinced, too, Steve, that it's out there. This dark matter is there and it functions, and I believe that's where our consciousness lies, and it's where we're connected. You know how I've always said we've got this wireless internet that we're connected to, which we're going to talk about this week? I've always believed that, and I think that's the answer to it. I could never understand what hooked it all together, and that's what happens. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. Ed, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Edward.
Good morning, George. How are you today?
All was well. How about Nashville?
Hey, well, it's foggy and all heck get out around here right now.
Well, be careful if you're out on the road.
Oh, I'm working.
Okay.
I had a question for you. Remember the gentleman that was going to have the eye operation there back a few months ago when you got involved in it?
Yes.
Tell me about him. How's he doing?
He is, as a matter of fact, I got an email this morning about him. He is going to his doctor. The people who are involved with him, because they listen to this program, they've got him going to the doctor. The doctor's going to tell him exactly what they need to do. The guy's neighbors are already tuned into it, so they're helping him, getting him there and everything else. And he might have now partial insurance, we've discovered, that will help it out. And the donator, who wishes to remain anonymous, is ready to go right after that doctor gives him his full report. So I'm very hopeful in the next few months, this guy's going to have his operation and we'll start seeing again. His cataracts will be brand new.
Well, I'll tell you, see, I have a little bit close to my heart because I was born blind. And I was till I was 5 years old, and I had a dermoid cyst on my optic nerve, and luckily my adopted mom noticed it, and, you know, she got me the proper help.
And now you see well?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I got 20/20 vision.
That's phenomenal.
It is. It's great. I mean, my mother, that's a whole other story, but she was a smoker, okay? And she believed so much in God, and she said, Lord, if you take him, give my son his sight, I'll never smoke another cigarette. And the day she died, she never did.
That's great.
Never did.
That is great.
One last thing. I know you got a lot of people. You are, like I said, I mean, of the greatest people I know. I mean, you've had some phenomenal guests on. And especially G. Edwin Griffin is my all-time favorite.
I love
him. That man there is, I'm telling you. I'm trying to convince radio talk show people I listen to during the day to stop going Democrat and Republican and call like it is.
That's the name of the game. You know what? Ed, you have just said exactly what I've tried to preach all my life. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. You know what? God love all of you. But you know what? You got to call it the way it is.
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you're a socialist and you want to make us a communist country, we're going to vote you out of office. That's all there is to it. And you know, they're talking about it like a third party. I got the perfect name for it. The Individualist Party. Okay, folks, here's what we are. Boom. Let's get to it.
Here we are. Just tell the truth. That's all that matters.
Well, hey, you have a great holiday, George. Lots of love and affection to you and your family, and God bless you all. And I'll be listening to you.
Absolutely. A little update on my friend. He came here with his wife from Los Angeles for Thanksgiving, and I had this great idea to have my entire family here for this festive Midwestern chili Thanksgiving meal. You know, it's always the best in the Midwest when you do that. And so they flew in from L.A., and the following Friday, Thanksgiving Friday, he trips, going up two steps, was not drinking, because everybody asked me, and he's now been paralyzed. It'll be 4 weeks on Friday. He's starting to get a little movement in his fingers and his toes, not a lot. He's starting to breathe on his own. He wasn't before, so that's a good sign. They did perform a tracheotomy on him because they wanted to get him off that breathing device, and eventually they'll seal that up. He's not talking yet because of the trach, and he's been trying to move, and they put him in a chair now, which is good, but it's going to take a long, long ordeal. And I hope to God this never happens to you, that you get really sick in a different city miles away from your home. Because, number one, we can't put him on a flight because he can't bend. And now they're saying that the medevac might cost him $16,000, so we might have to raise some money for him on that. And ironically, my daughter works for a number of airlines that medevac people, with hospital care all over the country. She flies kidneys, for example, to the right hospital, or the liver. Somebody needs a liver, she'll find it and get it sent. And so she's been working on that too. But I'm telling you, that has been for us just an absolute nightmare. And I've got to get back to L.A. in a couple weeks. We've got a lot of things going on, a lot of projects, and he's still here. He's still here in St. Louis, and we don't know when we're going to fly him back to L.A. It's incredible. And then he needs massive rehabilitation because, I mean, just picture yourself in a bed. You're now fully awake, and you can't move 24 hours a day. Absolute nightmare. So say a little prayer for him. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines continue right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.
This magic moment.
Never miss a detail on a show or a guest. Get the new Coast Zone newsletter, available for free at coasttocoastam.com.
And then it happened. It took me by surprise. I knew that you felt it too. By the look in your eyes, sweeter than wine, softer than the summer night. Everything I want I have. Whenever I hold you tight, this magic moment, while you're with.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year. With the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lies in the balance. There are people on the fire. There are children of the cannon.
From somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Like that old television program, you asked for it. We're doing that for you as well. I've had a lot of emails over the past few months about doing a show on FOPI prophecy, and that's exactly what we'll do on our next Coast to Coast program with Miriam Delicato. Her book, Blue Star Fulfilling Prophecy, and it's all about the Hopi Elders. So I'm glad you're going to be part of that program with us on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, final open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are on Coast to Coast. And by the way, those of you who are working on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, we're in the trenches with you. And those of you who don't have to work will just sit back and enjoy the program for a couple days and do your thing. Have you noticed, too, that most people will eat turkey? Tom, show me your hands. I got a little setup with Tom. I can see him back in L.A., by the way. He's little. He's about 3 inches tall, but he's back there. So let me ask you a question here, Tom. Next time I'll do it, I'll open up your speaker. I've got your speaker shut down. Most people will eat turkey on Thanksgiving and ham on Christmas. You agree with that? Yep. Little 3-inch Tom Danheiser lifting up his thumb, and his little thumb is about a quarter of an inch tall. There he is in his little box. Amazing technology. Let's go to Eric in Flushing, Michigan. Welcome to the show. Hi, Eric.
George, Merry, hey. Merry Christmas and a you jelly, too. Jelly holiday.
You too. You all ready for Christmas? All done?
Yeah, I'm prepared, and I just want to say that your buddy there, Tom, in L.A., is a giant of a colleague, as is David Cerita. Premier Radio Network is amazingly appropriate to describe you as the host, David as the guest tonight. Several things quickly here, George. I'm not a visionary, but tonight I discovered a most amazing, majestic wonderment of a connection with David. He was describing his angelic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Could be described in the Bible as a born-again experience. Well, in the process of his describing that event, I had this vision of the Ark of the Covenant and a medallion that was dangling. It hadn't fallen out. It was just dangling from the Ark. And then very briefly, I think, didn't David mention something about a medallion or a pendant?
Yes, yes.
And I'm thinking that sounds like it's a technology. I seem to recall previous episodes where he may have described this as a technology, and I'm simply admonishing you, as I did Tom when I called in, to maybe conduct your own personal investigations into that technology, because I think this vision is somehow connected with that medallion or pendant and might possibly represent sort of a supernatural conduit with the supernatural. I dropped out of college, and if I had had a physics instructor like David.
Oh, you know what? It would have made it interesting. You would have stayed in school.
I'd be a PhD astronomer now, at least. And George, another thing. John Lennon has a song, and I don't know the title, but I think it's a Christmas tune. And what I'm getting at here is the power of speech and thought in the context of a lyric, I think, is amazingly powerful. And in this song, So This Is Christmas and What Have You Done, I think at the end of that, George, he says, war is over now if you want it, or war is over if you want it now. Okay? Think of the power of that, George. Okay, if we combine the Coast to Coast AM's brilliance collectively combined we want all these wars, these genocide police actions, undeclared wars, we want them to cease now or, you know, tomorrow. We want this to cease. Just like your buddy who had that unbelievably despicable phone. Now,
oh, yeah.
Well, why don't we this week, George, as a Christmas, in the spirit of Christmas, why don't we combine our collective power to envision him being healed? What's his name?
Mike.
We need to do this. We need to think of him being healed. through our thoughts in the coast-to-coast audience. What do you think?
I'm glad you brought it up. You know, he's on our prayer list, but it just seems a little better coming from you, Eric, than me, asking for that kind of help, and I'm all for it.
And in closing, George, I want the audience, and maybe at some point in the future you could maybe play that tune. John also did one, Nobody Told Me There'd Be Days Like This, Strange Days Indeed. Those are probably two of my most favorite songs from his collection, which I've yet to acquire.
I think the Christmas one was So This Is Christmas, isn't it? Isn't that the name of it as well?
Yeah, So This Is Christmas, What Have You Done? And I think at the very end, George, and he says, and war is over if you want it now. Now think of that. I mean, the power of that, George, if we were to concentrate on that. Okay, so who are the conspirator culprits? We know who they are, right? So we should also focus our energy on holding, bringing them to account for their diabolical actions, and also to end all these genocide police actions that they have deliberately perpetrated.
What we don't do, and well said, Eric, is we don't do what they do in other nations, and that is huge, massive protests. I'm not talking about some that we've recently seen and tea parties and things like that. An Ayatollah passed away, and a cleric died in Iran, and he was against the government. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people in the streets supporting him. He died. He was 87 years old, to the point where the Iranian government didn't want it televised, didn't want any of that, trying to suppress it. We don't protest enough. I mean, we did during the Vietnam War, and that probably is one of the reasons why we finally decided to get out. But recently, we don't. You know, Americans are so mired in their own personal problems because, isn't that interesting? Let people be worried about their own little problems, and they won't worry about the big ones, that nobody says anything. And here we are, you know, still in Afghanistan, sending more troops, and we've been in there now 8 years. It'll be 9 next year. And Afghanistan, we've been there since 2003, and it just doesn't seem to end. But we need to start as a mass group simply to say enough is enough. And on we go. Of course, there'll be a nice pipeline built in Afghanistan when this is all said and done, won't there? Los Angeles we go. Leon, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Leon.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay, how are you?
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
I want to talk about 2012. I feel like 2012, like the movie, actually is basically, you know, to me, I feel like that's actually fear tactics. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen in 2012. But a lot of us is not tapped into our chakra systems or, you know, our metaphysics, or we're not tapped into our energy and all that. And stuff. We're supposed to transfer our souls into light beings, just like, you know, Jesus did. But a lot of people is not, like, consciously aware. They don't know where energy beings, like dark matter, live within us. Like, not only that, but we are, the universe conscious of itself.
Like, do you think what happened in that movie 2012 is going to happen to us?
Oh no! We're going through like a conscious like transformation. Actually, you know what I'm saying? That's what's going on. You know, think about all the kids that are intelligent. You know what I'm saying? We're getting bombarded by frequencies. That's why a lot of people is going wild, because they can't handle them. You know what I'm saying? They don't know what's going on. And then you got the 33rds, the Illuminati. Of course, you know they practice symbolism, numbers, all that stuff. You know, these are the numbers that you look out for: 18, 25, and 33. Anything that goes up in 33% or 33,000 troops, that's them, plain and simple, you know. And, you know, it's just...
Good point.
You know, it's just so much wickedness going on, because they sacrifice so many souls to let in certain demon gods into our world, man. And that's why...
It's the fight, Leon, between good and evil.
Yeah,
you know,
man,
that.
And I'm glad I'm on this side. You know what I'm saying?
I'm glad you are, too. We need about a million more like you. Let's go to Mary Margaret in Orlando, Florida. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, great. I wanted to talk, make a comment on your first guest. He was really wonderful, and he just really tied everything together. You know, with a lot of your other guests that I've heard on, especially the lady who did The Dragons in the Sky, the author of that,
mm-hmm.
and how she was also talking about this other higher level that we would be going on, and which is exactly what your speaker tonight was talking about, that the whole Earth and solar system was going up onto this higher level. And then he was saying, how is it going to differentiate between, you know, some people being able to reach that level and not? And I just wanted to comment that I think that we really have to focus on our abilities, those people who have the ability to go to those different dimensions and really develop themselves would be the ones that, you know, really make this shift with the whole Earth and solar system, like he was talking about.
He's right on, and you're very perceptive, Mary Margaret.
Well, thank you. I really want to go back, and I missed some of what he talked about because I'm at work, and so I had to go in and you know.
What do you do, by the way? What are you doing?
I'm a truck driver.
Oh, are you? Okay. How far do you go?
It pretty much I stay within Orlando. You know, sometimes I go out to Titusville and Melbourne sometimes. It just depends on what route I have. But I deliver the newspapers to the substations where the carriers come and then deliver them to the people.
What's going on in the newspaper business, Mary Margaret? Do you find it, are the papers getting the amount that you would carry around? Are you seeing that shrink?
Definitely shrinking immensely. To the size, the cutting down the actual size, the amount that's in there. Our hours have actually been cut where we used to deliver every week we'd have an insert part and then they'd actually print the front that night.
Right.
But on nights, a Monday and Tuesday edition, they really don't have inserts because there's just not enough to print. The only time that they do is if there's a holiday coming up and they have a lot of ads, and then you'll get a larger paper. But otherwise, it's shrinking drastically.
The world has gone internet. You know that?
Yes. Yeah.
But can you imagine, though, Mary Margaret, one day if we have some kind of outage, and let's say the internet's down for a month or 2 months, people aren't going to know what they're going to do. What are they going to do for information?
You know what? Actually, when we had back in, 2006, so we had Hurricane Charlie come through,
mm-hmm.
it totally wiped out everything. Everybody was very dependent upon that newspaper, us getting the newspaper out, and that's how they received their information was from the newspaper. So we've kind of seen that happen for a little bit, you know, when we had the hurricane come through and just
yep.
wiped out.
One of the dangers of going too technological is that when one day that technology is taken away, we're in deep trouble. Went to a drugstore a couple months ago, a big chain, right? Big sign. We may not be able to service you. Why? They had a power outage. Their computers were down. They were manually trying to do things. The lines were too big. People were upset. They can't handle it. They can't handle the old days. And let me tell you something. Drive up to a fast food restaurant and give one of the youngsters an extra quick order without them using their computer if they don't punch it in. They can't give you change for a $10 bill. It's impossible unless they look at the computer, which tells them how much they owe you. They cannot figure it out in their heads. Truly remarkable. Wilmington, Delaware, we go. Robert, it's your turn.
George, how are you doing?
Okay, Robert.
I had this dream that sent me back to 1979, and when I got there, my mother was my mother, married to a different man, and my father, he was my uncle, and
okay.
one of my cousins was like one of my brothers, and they're telling me I'm part of the family. And I'm sitting there going, no, 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 you're my father. And they're like laughing at me. And, you know, it was, like, so weird. And then I got to say, no, no, I'm married and this and that. And then when I started talking about 2009 with my wife and my kids, I started coming out of it. So I tried to jump back in and warn them about 2001. And then when I snapped out, when I came conscious, I was, like, didn't know who I was, where I was. And I was like, wait, 3 minutes, you know what I mean? And then I said to myself, whoa, what's going on here? So I got talking to a couple of friends of mine at work here, and they said it was a parallel universe. And I have no, and if it's what they say it is, how can you be in two different places? Can you understand what I'm saying?
Well, that's very possible. I mean, you could be in two different places. You could be crossing over in this parallel universe that is not quite exactly as your life is here, but it's probably similar with some of the same players that you obviously had playing different roles. The big question is what happened to the other you? The other you that should have been in that parallel universe.
Well, they were showing me pictures as a child there. That's what was really confusing. You know, I should have wrote all this down, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I was really confused.
That's wild.
Yeah, and I just was like, I can't wait to ask George. But do you think this was a parallel universe?
Absolutely. I mean, I think at this point, I believe that there are parallel universes that are many, many kinds of duplications of us in different roles, different scenarios. I mean, how and why, don't ask me that, but I do think it happens.
George, you have a good Christmas.
Okay, Robert, you too, and those of you who are going to be joining us throughout the week, don't forget our live Christmas Eve programming and also on our very special Christmas Day show as well. Let me give you a little update of what we have in store for you. Of course, tomorrow we're going to be talking about Hopi prophecy. That's always fascinating. Wednesday, Linda Moultonhowe is joining us. We're moving her up a little bit. Normally she goes on the last Thursday of the month, but she wants to spend a little time with her family, so she will be live Wednesday, and we'll be talking about the British Ministry of Defense closing down its UFO hotline and offices. We're talking about the Martian meteorite. Gerald Salenti will join us with her. And also we're going to talk about Linda's own angelic intervention experiences. And Thursday, fascinating program on Christmas Eve, including a brief interview with Dr. Gary Habermas as he talks about the evidence for life of Jesus. Evidence, he says. So I'm looking forward to that as well. For Jesse Angelo, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safer.